And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, I was late. Well, howdy. Thing on. It does appear to be on. That's a bonus. It's a minute and a half past the hour, and the program is beginning. This is live. It is Friday on the front porch on the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I've been away for a while. We last spoke last Friday, as a matter of fact, because I've been off bringing you through the good offices of our dear friend Dr. Bill O'Brien and the PRISM, P-R-I-S-M, West Virginia 2011 Summer Academy. An absolute adventure. An absolute adventure in American history. And it has been nothing short of magnificent. Let me say right off the bat that if you did not hear Dr. Bill's lecture, address, whatever you wish to call it, of two nights ago, you missed a treat. All of these files will be going up at my page on White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org. That's where all the archives live. And, you know, if you've just got a lot of stuff to do where you'll have time for some listening, maybe you got to go out and mow the South 40. You listening, Dennis? Load these lectures up with particular emphasis on the offerings of Dr. Tom Tierney, Dr. Bill O'Brien, and Dr. John Kaminsky. Because if you are equipped with what those three gentlemen have to offer, you are absolutely girded in such a way as that no teabagger will ever be able to withstand the onslaught of your factual arguments. The information is that good, that real. Now I'm sitting. We're in a classroom down at Concord College at the Nick Joe Ray Hall Technology Center there, and I'm up in the back corner. The room is packed. Every seat is filled and then some. Because I got to tell you, it's been a while since I've been in college. But apparently there's more of me than there was back in college. That or else this relatively new building was designed for hobbits. And hobbits of no great girth. It's a little bit of a... But we're packed in there like sardines. It's good that the crowd is this big. Because the idea that this kind of information is being made available, this kind of history, this kind of analysis, this kind of actual skull sweat is being made available to more than 50 teachers of history in the secondary schools of Southern West Virginia is heartening, to say the least. I won't begin to try to condense or to summarize any of what has been said thus far. That's what the archives are for. And by the way, there are also archives available for your viewing at our Ustream page. If you go to Ustream, that's the letter U, followed by the word stream, ustream.tv, and simply search American History Seminar, bang, we will pop right up there. And you will have access to all of the videos. They've all been saved and annotated and noted and tagged and folded and spindled and mutilated. We've used no hooks. but they're all there for you. And if you will avail yourselves of them, you know, I've been saying this for months, and I hope some of you are checking this stuff out. Because I don't care how much American history you think you know, especially when it centers on the Revolution and the ratification of the Constitution and the philosophical underpinnings that gave rise to the urge for independence from Great Britain. And now we've moved into the 19th century. I don't care how much you think you know about it. You don't know what these people know. And it is being provided to you gratis. So do avail yourself of it. It is. Agnes sits here monitoring the stream so she can text to me if I'm screwing up or something. Agnes has been sitting here watching and listening, and I get these texts every now and then, just, oh my God, Bob, I can't believe what I'm hearing. And Bob, this is amazing. This is like water to a person dying of thirst. And several other of you have written to me along these lines as well. I especially commend to you, as I noted, Dr. Bill's remarks from a couple of nights ago. It's something special. For those of you who have been listening to the horn for a lot of years, and we've been around for a lot of years, we've outlasted a lot of other efforts. But to those of you who have listened for a lot of years, you may recall actually listening to Dr. Bill when he was on the horn. It was a couple of the best hours of programming per day that the horn has ever produced. And to listen to Dr. Bill as he gets into the meat of his subject, and to hear and to just listen patiently and absorb the information, and then wait as he comes all the way back around and tidies it all up and ties it all together in an absolutely stunning peroration. You're not going to hear that anywhere else. You are not going to hear that anywhere else. So I hope you will avail yourself of this material, because it is magic. It is magnificent. It is soaring. And it's not the same old usual stuff you hear about American history. This is the stuff that the people who really sit thinking about this stuff talk about when nobody's listening. Only we are. You get it when it all begins to sink in and you realize, well, how can I put this? Hearing the United States referred to as a democracy will never strike you the same way again. You know, that's a word that we like to bandy about a bit. I even heard it in a clip from Prime Minister's Question Time from the UK earlier today when I was doing prep, and I had gone over to Crooks and Liars. Something's blah, blah, blah. Blah, 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 our democracy, blah, blah, blah. No such thing. And when the doors open and the light comes, the curtains get pulled back, the light comes streaming in the windows, and you realize that we have the Constitution we have because a lot of people in those days were afraid that democracy was getting out of hand. That there was just way too much democracy that had to be reined in, that the money was getting nervous. Well, you begin to see the rise and growth of America in a different light. Not a bad light, just a different light. A more realistic light, and we are, after all, a member of the reality-based community, right? Just checking. So do avail yourself of this. And I want to share an email with you real quick right off the bat. Got an email from our buddy John. You've heard John a few times. John studies in the field of archaeology. I guess you would say he is the Horn's resident archaeologist. But he has a passion for history itself. And John wrote to me earlier this afternoon, and he said, "Hey, Bob, I've been catching the Prism series, and I am blown away by the quality of information that's being put out for free to anyone who tunes in. I think a worry is supremely important in this day and age when we have Bachman, Palin, Kane, and others putting out fake historical information to suit their own twisted ends. When people are armed with facts and a critical perspective within which to apply them, we can spot right-wing revisionism when we see it. And that, says John, is vital." He continues, "So I'm thrilled with the Horn's commitment to broadcasting the Prism series, but I also realize that you're taking a financial hit by not being on the air every night. So I'd like to put out a contribution challenge for tonight's broadcast. I'll match your fundraising that comes in tonight up to the first $50. So if five people contribute $10 apiece, I'll contribute 50. If two people contribute $25 apiece, I'll contribute 50. The combination doesn't matter. Basically, I'll double the first $50 that come in. If you pull in $500 tonight, I'll still contribute $50. Limited resources, alas. Well, I understand. It's not much," says John, incorrectly. "Oh, it's a lot, believe me. But for those thinking about giving a small donation, now's the perfect time because your dollars will multiply." John closes saying, "Hope you and the family are doing well, and thanks again for your efforts on behalf of all of us." Thank you kindly, John. Thank you very, very much. Because what he says is true. It's the 8th day of July, and thus far we have brought in about $155 for the month of July. That and those were critical. Well, I couldn't have gotten back to Concord to continue the broadcast series without that. And right now we're kind of the gas to get there Sunday night. So John's offer at a remarkably good time. So five members of the Thrifty 250 get their contributions doubled by John and his kind matching offer. Now, off to the races. It is Friday on the front porch. If we're doing this outside, we really would be under the front porch because it's raining rather steadily outside. Not Donder and Blitzen, not the chasms of hell yawning open or anything like that. Just a good, hard, steady summer's rain. The kind of stuff that sends gardeners and farmers out dancing in it. A soaking rain. Not the kind of stuff that just hits and runs off because it's coming down so hard, but the stuff that's sometimes referred to as a Scots mist. A soaking rain. So we would be under roof. So it's Friday on the front porch. And frankly, Appalachia, what's left of it, unspoiled and untormented, is beautiful in this kind of weather. Oh, it's wet, and everywhere you step it squishes. And the clouds seem to be just at treetop level. The fog itself becomes tangible and physical. And everything is shrouded in a sort of soft focus. So it's a lot of its sort here in one of the largest temperate rainforests on the planet. Now, I don't know what you've got on your mind to converse about this evening. Everything is... Well, everything but one thing is open to discussion. And I don't want to be an ass or anything, but would you do me a favor, please? Would none of you please... And I don't think I've ever put this kind of a limitation on Friday on the front porch before. And I don't really think I need to mention this, but just for safety's sake, because I don't want to run screaming out into the rain tonight. could we agree at the beginning of the program not to talk about the crazy the fact that Nancy Grace has not been dragged out into the streets and caned evades me. Could we not talk about the Casey Anthony case? And having said that, I will say no more. Now, maybe you want to discuss this recent issue of whether or not President Not Sure has decided to put the lives and well-being of 30 million seniors on the bargaining table. Well, not really on the bargaining table, on the menu, if you will. Maybe you want to talk about that. Maybe you want to talk about the ongoing and burgeoning it's more than a scandal. It's a sickening conspiracy that has been that has had the lid pulled off of it in the United Kingdom with regard to Rupert Murdoch. Maybe you want to discuss that, and I think that is I think that would be very, very good for us so to do. But before we get started, I got one thing that I want to go to because, well, damn it, it pisses me off. And I want you to have it at hand just so you can understand a little bit about the world that Appalachian people live in. There he goes again. Now, you want to hear this. I told you, I've mentioned repeatedly this recent health study that says the nearer one gets to a mountaintop removal operation, the greater the likelihood becomes that one's children will be born deformed and with various and sundry, six different categories, really, of birth defects. Well, there's a long history of denying the toxic hell that coal has unleashed on Appalachia. You know, in the grand scheme of things, I can't help thinking that as my forebears were stealing the lands here from the native peoples who occupied it peacefully, well, mostly, they fought over it some, too. After all, the Iroquois Confederacy sold it to the Virginians, saying, oh, yeah, we've conquered everybody down there. No, go ahead, take it. When the whole time the Shawnee were here and go, wait! We don't even like those people. So, yeah. But anyway, my people came in and stole the land. And it reminds me of the shortest poem that Robert Frost ever wrote. It's a poem called Forgive, O Lord. And we all know that my Scots forebears were very, very pious people. There's an old saying that the Scots landed in America and fell on their knees and prayed to God and then fell on the natives and prayed on them. It's pretty much true. There's another old saying that the Scots feared God so much they had no room left to fear anyone else. Equally so. But this poem by Robert Frost says, Forgive, O Lord, my little jokes on thee, and I'll forgive thy great big one on me. It is a sort of recognition of one of those theses that runs the length and breadth of this. Be an almighty God, and almighty God be not some imaginary hallucination collective on the part of the human species. That if there be such a thing, he is a god of irony. It is a god of irony. She is a god. Animals recognize this in their creation or their veneration of coyote god, who was a trickster. But with all that going as prologue, I can't help thinking that there was a little chuckle going on, cosmically, metaphysically, as my forebears dispossessed people who lived on the earth and didn't scrabble a bunch in it, unleashing all the poisons that lived underneath these Appalachian mountains. Oh, yeah, go ahead and steal that land. Do it. Oh, just do it. Go ahead. Yeah, because I tell you what, I'm going to unleash some shit on you. and it has happened. If you live near a mountaintop removal operation in Appalachia, your children have a 42% greater likelihood of being born with a variety of some 6 different birth defects. Brought to you by the coal industry. It keeps the lights on in funeral homes. But going back to the earliest days when coal miners would come out of the dusky, dusty, filthy, dank, damp, toxic environs of underground coal mines, coughing and spitting up blood and eventually dying of what would eventually be discovered to be black lung disease. Coal miners' pneumoconiosis is the formal term. The coal company said, "Nah, ain't no such a thing. We're good, honorable businessmen. We're just digging up the coal that's keeping the Industrial Revolution a-turning and a-going." They denied black lung even existed. "Ah, them's all smokers. They smoke, everybody." You know, the coal industry was the first industry ever to suggest that cigarette smoking was bad for you, but they only did it to evade their own responsibility for killing people with coal dust. Coal dust is bad for you. It's toxic. It's terminal. So, flash forward, and we get this new study regarding birth defects near mountaintop removal operations. At first, the coal industry said, "Well, you know, we ain't had a chance to study it up enough yet. We ain't studied on it. We ain't got the checks out to our own paid little prostitute researchers who'll blame it on something else. We ain't ready to comment yet." But, you know, that's probably not true. That's how them liberals are. All the time trying to make up stuff that gets in the way of business in America. It ain't real. Well, they've outdone themselves. Earlier this evening, when I was outside getting in the rusty red pickup truck to toddle down into town, as is my wont before showtime, just to sort of walk around, blow, you know, that kind of thing, I looked around at those skies that were hanging at treetop level, as I mentioned. It's beautiful. And I thought, gorillas in the mist. Well, it's not really gorillas in the mist here in central Appalachia, but apparently, as far as the National Mining Association is concerned, it's something close. Hillbillies in the mist. Now, like I said, we're going to have plenty of time to talk about whether or not Barack Obama has put a lot of us on the menu, or whether he's playing us. We'll have time to talk about Rupert Murdoch and any number of the myriad stories I missed in my absence. But this one, just, I got to get this one out front just so you can know what we're dealing with here, what kind of an outlaw, sleazy, slimy, filthy, disgusting bunch we're talking about in the form of the coal industry, and in this case, the National Mining Association. It's been a couple of weeks now since the story came out, and I guess the coal industry has had a chance to have a look at it. And in response to the fact that mountaintop removal causes a 42% greater likelihood of a wide variety of birth defects in children born in Appalachia, well, the coal industry's looked around for a loophole. And by God, they think they found it. Sit down. No, really, sit down. You're gonna love this. The National Mining Association has now criticized the birth defect study, and shown its invalidity as follows. Yeah, just so you can, just to remind you of what music's playing there. You know what's coming, don't you? This is a quote. This is a real quote. Boy, howdy, would I like to find the author of this here quote. I'd like to find him about 2:30 in the morning, stumbling out of a bar somewhere in, I don't know, Georgetown. The National Mining Association has announced that the birth defect study is flawed. No, really, is flawed, because why? Well, like I said, this is a quote. The birth defect study is flawed, according to the National Mining Association, because, and I quote, the study failed to account for consanguinity. That's a $10 word for incest. You know, you're my sister. You're my sister. I'm your brother. I'm your brother. Hoo-wee! The study failed to account for consanguinity, one of the most prominent sources of... That's right! The National Mining Association just said every hillbilly with a deformed birth baby has that deformed baby because we're a bunch of inbred goddamn hillbillies who don't have enough common sense not to get it on with the relations. You know how it is. Deeper kin, closer in. Closer kin, deeper in, something like that. Y'all come back now, you hear? And clean up your mess. Now, doesn't that just kind of take your breath away? I mean, how's that for some straight-up gall? And guess what? Every elected representative I've got is probably by now on board with this quote. The study failed to account for consanguinity, one of the most prominent sources of birth defects. Well, damn. That's it. Just incest. That's why. You know how it goes. All those vascular birth defects, all those cardio birth defects, all those pulmonary birth defects, all those endocrine birth defects, all those brain birth defects. It's just incest. It's because Jethro couldn't keep off of Ellie Mae. And there he was, a rutting on my mailer. Dang, you know. Just dang. So I hope you can understand why I delayed by a couple of minutes our discussion of whether or not we're on the menu. We are. And whether or not Rupert Murdoch is a sleazy slime ball who should be dragged into the street and caned. Because he is. I hope you can... Because, you know, we tell jokes on ourselves here in Appalachia. But I'm damned if we much care for having others offer them up as serious fact. It don't play well. It's kindly sick, if you know what I mean. Yep. It's all just inbreeding. I thought so. Pardon me for just a minute, lest we have some kitty engineering here. Sit on my lap, Mushu. You'll be going back in the house later, as soon as we take a break, which we're going to do. I want to make, as they've rolled in, first of all, we are $30 toward John's $50 challenge. And News Ninja Susan sent in a note. She said, I'll add to that challenge up to an additional $100. Bless your heart, Susan. Thank you. Didn't need to do that. So now it is on. If we can bring in $150, it'll turn into $300. Now that's making your money work. So there you have it. And I hope you'll pardon my my little bit of frustration at being called an inbred hillbilly by the National Mining Association. By God, if we had a few million listeners here, we'd have letters going out to the National Mining Association saying, why hadn't that dirty little son of a bitch that wrote that been fired yet? I mean, my God, they called their own workers a bunch of inbred hillbillies. Get at every birth defect in Appalachia to inbredness, to inbreeding. Right? Yeah. No, that's not an audio defect you're hearing there. That's a cat that's very happy to see me home. She's decided she's going to be a stole this evening. She's around my neck. So we got to take a break. We'll come back to your phone calls 28 minutes before the hour. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
By the time you were born, there were four other siblings, with your mama waiting, your daddy in jail, and your oldest brother was away at a home. And you didn't meet him till you were old. Old enough to know better. Old enough to know better. But you took to his jawline and long sandy hair. And he made you feel like none of the others. And the way he looked at you touched you deep down in there. So you jumped up and rolled into the sunset, but the sequel, it started with the next morning sun. And the dew on the bike seat, and you all aglow, and the love he put in you, and a life on the run. So you moved to a small town, and then to another, into another with another on its way. And you both swore to God you would keep it together, and the state wouldn't take your babies away. Now the district attorney said he might have forgiven, had lots of reasons to turn out this way. You both go to jail for them four little babies you made and delivered along the way. Show compassion for a heathen he damned. You awoke in a jail cell, alone and so lonely, 7 years in Michigan.
The patron saint band of The Horn, that is the Drive-By Truckers. And, well, forgive my macabre sense of humor. But, you know, that little dedication, the deeper in, goes out to the National Mining Association, who thinks that everybody who lives in Appalachia is an inbred hick. Nice people, that. So enough. That's enough of me. It is Friday on the Front Porch, and let's go straightways to the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert. Doing,
buddy?
Doing okay?
I don't know, that kid Ferg looks a lot like you. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, but he looks a lot like Agnes, too, so that, you know, that's a good thing.
Like her, too. What's going on? Unbelievable.
How will the National Mining Association ever explain that, Brother Albert?
They're so filthy. They never end. You know, I just got back from our little trip that we took with the family to New York, did the museum, and I'll get to all that in a second. But on the way back, I saw a sign that almost gave me about 2 hours of rage and fury. I didn't even need to drink one of those five-hour energy drinks. This is on the way back through Pennsylvania. It said, "The wind dies, the sun sets. Cole keeps the lights on."
No.
Yeah. I mean, it was the only one I saw, so...
No, where? What, no, again, where?
In Pennsylvania, like in the heart of it.
Oy.
Yeah, so I was like, here they come, advertising up here. You boys want, you Amish boys want jobs? There's probably a few mountains up there with a layer or two in there, maybe, you think?
Yeah, or we could longwall it, or... contour mine it. That's another one of their fun lists for mountaintop removal. Contour mining.
Yeah.
Yeesh.
Yeah, they are filthy. And they'll use
I can just see Hiram and Lemuel on those D9 caterpillars now.
Well, yeah, boy.
And I'm sure the National Mining Association wouldn't, when it gets there, the National Mining Association will be more than happy to trot that back out, Albert, and say, well, I mean, my God, look who, it's the Amish.
Exactly. I mean, well, you know, that's if these liberals, they keep, you know, trying to put regulations on fuel, you know, maybe we'd be able to turn coal into diesel fuel. We wouldn't need horse and buggies and all that stuff, you know.
Just spoiling all their fun.
Filthy liberals. Anyway, yeah, they're disgusting, these people. I can't take it anymore. I did take the girls, little troopers. We did about 85% of the Museum of Natural History. Not a whole lot of whining, a lot of enthusiasm. It was a good thing.
They had to be thrilled inside that building.
Oh, yeah. It was really cool, too, because we had taken them down to the water, the sound.
There were bugs and rocks, right?
Oh, yeah, there was horseshoe crabs. They're in their season to mate, so you see them, you know. And they're in, you know, and I said to her, I say to them, like, what is that? I'm like, oh, that's an ancient creature called the horseshoe crab. Now, horseshoe crab didn't stick, but ancient creature did. So when they saw them embedded in the rock, the ancient creature. You know, so that worked.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was pretty fun. They had an absolute blast. We took them to the Tenement Museum. So if anyone's in New York, we're all immigrants here, right? Aren't we in this country? You got to go to the Tenement Museum. You got to take your kids. It's an amazing place. It's just an amazing place. It's just unbelievable, where you get to see what it looks like in 1916 and how it feels and so on and so forth. And if you're going to go to Ellis Island or anything, if that interests you, you definitely must do the Tenement Museum. Anyhow, here's the thing that bugged me about the Museum of Natural History. It was a great place. There were some replicas. That was a little bit of annoyance. One thing that really just got to me, though, was, you know, like every one now and then, in a little corner here or there, you'd see a sticker in a dark corner with no light on it. You'd look around, wouldn't by even pointing to it, they wouldn't be talking about species and extinction. There's a brass on the floor, and there was a light on that on the floor. And so it would talk about in the sixth extinction. And then you walk up to the Margaret Mead exhibit, right, and there's just bunches of people up. Right, the islanders, and in the back is a Moai, you know, from Easter Island, Rapa Nui, place we've talked about many, many times.
That little laboratory experiment for what we're doing to the planet right now.
Amen. This is why I love you, Brother Bob. You know this instantaneously, and do I? And I look because I'd like to, you know, I'd like to at least look and see what they have. Not a mention of what and why and where they went and what they turned into. Nothing. Not even a peep. So I had to make sure. My twins are apart. One of them was with my dad, who was up in the front, and the other one was with Renee, and they were kind of lollygagging in the back near the reed maps of the Native Americans in the exhibit right before. So, yeah, it took them a while. But once I got, I think it was Rice, it was the first one, I made sure I explained to her in the front of the crowd of all these posing tourists loudly enough so they would hear it, that how they are an example of what not to do, of how not to treat the planet, because literally they couldn't stop carving these frickin' things, and they wound up destroying their entire environment, and they went pretty much extinct into what, Cook or one of those dudes found them, and, you know.
Well, yeah, and there's that period between when the last tree falls and white folks show up, and that's when the fun's really going down, Albert, because that's when, you know, because there was a combination of stuff, you know, rats. And so rats went on the, when the last tree went, you know, rats went on the menu. And when they got most of the rats out, guess who else, guess what went on the menu next? Yeah, Fred and Wilma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you've got all that lovely cannibalism going on and, oh, sure. It's, yeah, and.
We're down to 3,000 when they arrived. 3,000. And they were eating each other. They were just about done. Another 100 years, and there wouldn't be any of them left. And, you know, and so there wasn't a man. I had to write an email regarding these things. You know, like, I had to, and I asked the curator, whoever the damn thing went to, probably some poor Haitian woman, you know, who doesn't speak English or in some dusty corner of the basement. But I sat down, and I had to ask him, is extinction important? Because, I mean, if it is, why are you so afraid to educate people about that we're going into it? You know, I understand everyone wants to take a, you know, this is a vacation, but, you know, like, these are the hallowed halls of human history. And why, you're not there for Mickey Mouse and other nonsense. You're there to be, you know, to be enlightened, to actually look at these things and see, you know, and for where we all know, what we know, where the past is, where we can go in the future. Unless we decide to steer in a different direction.
Well, I'm just curious. I've got to ask one question because you asked the question, why aren't we telling people about extinction? Anywhere in the Museum of Natural History there in beautiful New York City, did you happen to see any brochures that said, brought to you with a generous contribution from Georgia Pacific or Shell Oil or BP or GE? Because, you know, that stuff doesn't just buy shelves to put skulls on. That stuff buys silence, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I didn't quite, I'm pretty sure in that museum, I really didn't see any of that, which is decent. That is something that very well could be. They might not just put it on the stands. They haven't updated a lot of those things since, you know, a long time ago. I mean, so, you know, they could very well, you just have to go look on the Board of Trustees or whatever on it, you know, now, and you probably see how clear it is.
Well, it's kind of sad that we have to do that sort of thing, but really, I think in order to be informed now, we kind of do have to sort of have to do that thing.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll tell you right now, I just kind of got back, and we finally kind of woke up, you know how a trip like that.
I got back on the road almost immediately after getting back here from Netroots Nation. I might be okay somewhere out in early September. we gotta be cognizant of that sort of stuff, Albert, because, I mean, for instance, the Koch brothers, God, I hate them. The Koch brothers, and one in particular, the one that looks like Michael Caine. I don't know which Koch brother that is, but there's a Koch brother who looks a lot like Michael Caine, especially from Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Or maybe Get Carter. In both instances, they're, you know, crooks.
Yes.
But, you know, he's a big patron of the New York Metropolitan Opera or the New York City Ballet or, you know, one of those, you know, highfalutin things where people stand around with cups of tea with their little fingers sticking out. You know, he's a genuine patron of the arts. And, of course, being cash-strapped artistic organizations, they would take money from the devil himself.
Yes.
But the other thing is, I doubt you will be seeing Rapa Nui, the opera, at the Met because of the Coke money. And you won't see Ballet of the Last Rat at the New York City Ballet because of the Koch brothers. because, you know, one of the filthy things about money is that it has the power to pervert almost everything.
Exactly. In fact, we were, I did get to visit the hallowed ground of Tesla's tower. And, so that, cause that was, you know, as I told you, it was right down the road from us. But we had visiting this, cause the Port Jefferson was where I grew up they used to build ships there. There was a couple little things like that. So we were at one of these museums, and this guy starts talking to me about, you know, this and that. And I talked about Tesla, and he knew about Tesla. It was, you know, one of those good things. But then he talked about, we started getting into health insurance because this place was, they had a doctor's office attached to it. And he had said to me, something about Obamacare. You know, something about, oh, Obama. And he kind of said it, and then we kind of got interrupted by the lady and said it again. See, now, this is, I guess, you know, my philosophy that we, you know, democracy is here in the street, not in the government. We have a representative government. So that's just kind of how I push this country. So he said this, I'm like, well, you know, the real problem with Obama is he's trying to make everyone happy. To that, he agreed. Then he started to talk about it on the insurance company, but, you know, and then we got to talk about insurance. Preempt with, hey, these guys need billion-dollar retirement packages when they're done at 7 years old. No. And back to the money. I've never run into anybody who's ever disagreed, and I'm sure they exist, but I personally have not ever had anyone to my face tell me that someone should have $1 billion. And if they even kind of look like they have a glint in their eye, and I should then, you know, I preempt with, Should I be allowed an atomic weapon in my basement? Of course not. Right, because there's too much power. And then, you know, it's the kind of things that we have to educate. You know, right now, Tuesday is when we look to recall one of these slimy, disgusting Republican state senators that has enabled this mask removal. I shrink of them by getting them to get the hell out of office. But, you know, we got the recall on Tuesday, and there are, you know, tons of people. And you've seen the neighborhood. How many billionaires live in this city of this little tiny town?
Yeah, I'm thinking none.
Yeah. I mean, how many of these guys, I mean, even in the next town over, I wonder how many billionaires are there. Because they're none. I live in the poorest county of Wisconsin. It's all little farms and little farmettes and things like that. You know, and then we make a couple things. We only have a couple businesses, mostly organic food. That's really like the big, you know, money maker in this community. Oh, there's the Indian casinos right there on sovereign land. So, but, that's it. So, when I see my neighbors with panty signs, it's just outrageous to me that you would imagine that you could sit there and align yourself with that mindset. But, hey, Michelle Bachmann's got sex appeal, right? Right?
Oh, that's not, well, I...
Yeah. Oh no! She's
no, I think the likes of she, I think the likes of she and Godzilla from Wasilla call into question the sexual preferences, and I don't mean straight versus gay. I mean the sexual preferences of a lot of right wing heterosexual men, because how that gets to be sexy? Sorry, dunno.
Yeah. And I'll tell you that there is really no...
I mean, did you see that story? I mean, we've all kind of wondered, Albert, about, you know, that woman got through law school? Really? And I don't know if you saw it or not, but there's a story now out that explains all this. Her husband made her go to law school.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's the head of the family and she has to be submissive to him.
Oh, well, it's... God, that's
and so he made her go to law school to be a tax lawyer, I guess so he wouldn't have to pay an accountant. Because he's a psychologist who sucks at the federal teat. Why, at the same time that his wife is out there doing all she can to kill Medicare and Medicaid.
Interesting.
I can't fathom it. But then again, there's a lot I can't fathom about her. And I guess it's okay to talk about her because she's actually running for president as opposed to that poser.
Mm-hmm.
She's running for president. You know, she wants to live in John Wayne Gacy's America, she told us. And she said something that just kind of, she said she hopes that higher unemployment will help her presidential campaign.
Oh, the mask is off, isn't it?
No. Oh.
It's just, I mean, it's...
I'm back.
Yeah, did you miss me?
Futurama, you know, Nixon's head in a jar. But the thing is, he'd be a liberal compared to her.
Yeah. Well, I'd vote for Nixon over any of these crazies. In a heartbeat. Who wouldn't? How could you not? You know, well, I mean, yeah, right, he was a scumbag. But compared to these people, it's not even close. It's not even close. These people are, I mean, he was we know that where he is. God, these people are ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. I can't even believe anyone even listens to them. Right? The other thing is, the biggest problem is that when you talk to their supporters, they're just immune to common sense. They're just ignorant. I encourage you at least to...
I mean, I was wandering around over at BartCop today, just, you know, checking stuff out, seeing, you know, what's going on. Because, you know, I've been reading BartCop since God was a baby. And I guess the big thing at teabagger parties these days and celebrations and festivals and things like that, they're selling T-shirts, not kidding, Albert, that say, yep, I'm a racist. Wow.
Yeah. You should have heard it there. Of course they're racist. You should have heard the comments about Obama taking the guns. No, he doesn't want to take the guns. He wants to close the gun, that gun show loophole, you know, take away guns from people. And, you know, guns like felons who could just walk into a gun show and say, oh, I like that.
Or Al-Qaeda terrorists who could also into a gun show. That's a mighty long beard there, brother. Oh, I'm Amish. Yeah. Back to the Amish again. Sorry, not beating on him, but...
Yeah. He's in a turtleneck. Yeah. You're not Arab, aren't you, boy? No, I'm not, sir. I'm Indian. Oh, okay. I mean, you know, like Gandhi. You know, they like to look like they, you know, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What would you do with this gun if I shoot that gun in the head? Bring it on! $50 off! And you gotta, you know, I mean, that's how it is. I mean... Who's judging it? It's private bail. They don't have to do anything. And I love how they echo, there's no gun show loophole. It's all those people that do that. Probably guys that go down there and sell 500 weapons to somebody. You got a license. I got a license.
I've been to gun shows in West Virginia. There's a gun show loophole. Trust me. I could give $200 to a 5-year-old and he could put it on the... Well, son, you look a little short for a grown-up. Yeah, he's a midget. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, here's your Glock 9mm, and here's your 32 round banana clip for it. Happy target shooting.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, they of course when you know Obama says they're talking about removing these clips from handguns and so forth, you know, all the things that got to come out. Oh, he's trying to arm them. There's an acorn. That's real. I can't make that crap up.
I know.
That's what it's just like, huh? What the fuck? What? Acorn? You guys just don't stop. Planned Parenthood. They're planning an assault. Call up General Bachman. We got to defend the fifth line. I mean, they're just ridiculous. And I'll tell you another thing that was really nice to hear. I only, cause, you know, I just got home, so I'm barely catching up. The prism, I told you, it's on my list. The minute I hang up with you, that's what I'm doing for the rest of the day. Children, be quiet. Daddy's learning. So.
What a line. Daddy's learning.
Daddy's reading. What you reading for, Daddy? Anyway, you know, so.
Peace be upon him.
Peace be upon him. So, you know, I sit there and I was listening to the Van Jones little thingies, right? He's doing all right. How can you argue with him? He's nailing them. He's just annihilating them. He's right. We're not broke. How stupid is that? It's pretty freaking stupid when we don't have to do very much to fix any of this crap. And look at these Republicans. Of course they don't want jobs to go good. Of course not. That was part of the plan from the beginning. The only thing that didn't go according to that plan was the freaking economy blew up in Bush's face. He said he's too stupid to realize he had to stand up when the music was going. And he said,
Jesus.
Sitting down. He's ridiculous. So, you know.
I'm sorry. I got to slow you down. That's a beautiful one. That's one for the ages. Too stupid.
Well, thanks, brother. Yeah.
Didn't realize he had to stand up when the music was going.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I need these.
Yeah. Right under the front room. So, but that was part of the plan. We've been talking about this for years. Of course, I mean, come on now. That's what they wanted to do. And, of course, that's why they're sitting there dragging their heels every freaking step of the way. And that's why, you know, well, shit, I don't let anybody forget that. They've been dragging their heels every thing. Why? What's his name? What's my another Wisconsin disgrace over here? What's his Walker? Well, not Walker. I see that guy just looping in my head. I can't wait to recall this son of a bitch. Anyway, what the other guy? The Paul Ryan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought you were talking about the Madison Strangler. Prosser.
Yeah, Prosser. He's another one. But, you know, why always, we have to be austerity, and cut Medicare, cut all, blah, 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 nonsense he's talking. Oh, he's going to go drink $700 in wine? I don't know how to get it deep. Like, what is he trying to do? I thought this guy... $100? But it's okay, because he paid for $250.
Jeebus.
$700. Some lady, you know, a little story. No big deal other than, you know, it's hypocrisy. Of course.
Well, no, that's belt tightening, because if he wasn't tightening his belt, it would have been $2,000 worth of wine.
Oh, yeah. And I know you know where I stand with that Florida woman and all that other stuff, and you know how I don't even want to talk about it, but I do say about how what Rush Limbaugh said about it.
Oh, no.
Did you hear what that
said? No.
Did you hear? Liberals wouldn't have cared if what's her face shouldn't be named baby hiding in the womb. They never stop. Stop. Never stop. They just... Blah.
Yeah, I know.
Just blah. And I don't even care about that damn case. I want to know about Clarence Thomas. You know, that's...
Why has he not been clapped in irons? There's a question.
Yeah, what's up with that? That's what I want to hear about. I don't want to hear about this. That's what Roger Ebert, you know, you think he's a little sharper than... But he still gets into that, you know, that glitzy, glamoury kind of, you know, thing of the moment kind of thing. He wraps himself into that a little too much.
Away. I'm baiting.
I'm standing with the Mao statue. Oh, look at me. I'm holding up his chin. Oh, I'm going to pick his nose. Take a picture. Oh, extinction. La, 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 la. Anyway, you know, so he sat there and talked about he was going to watch What's-Her-Face, the Grace chick. I'm like, why? Is she going to mention Clarence Thomas? Is that what she's doing now? Is she finally talking about that? Oh, no? So what are you doing watching it? Why aren't you talking about Clarence Thomas? Who cares about this stupid woman? I don't care. You know, I mean, if she was black, nobody would pay attention.
Nope.
You know, because the black mother drove off the freaking cliff over there in the Bronx. We talked about it for what? 10 minutes?
Yeah, sorry. No.
I mean, come on. I mean, you know, come on. Who cares about this nonsense? That's what everyone, they sit there and they say, you know, even the in-laws, the religious, da-da-da. Like, I'm not judging her.
Do you know that I was sitting there producing, running cameras, Ferg was down there, mm-hmm. and a note actually got passed down the back of the lecture hall saying that blah, blah, found not guilty. And I just looked over, and it wasn't Ferg's writing. I don't know whose writing it was. But I just went, I just picked it up and just kind of threw it back. Oh, no. Not because of the verdict, but because that had actually seeped all the way into this magnificent seminar.
Mm.
And my attention was diverted from some pretty magnificent stuff for, you know, 3.5 seconds to find,
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Bastards.
I hear you. Yeah. Stop it. Stop paying attention to this crap. I mean, I'm not the most educated person in the world, but my God, you know, don't you see similarities between myths? That's what myths are there for, to kind of, you know, show you little ways, like the allegory of the cave, and, you know, these basic, simple things that are taught for eons. Don't you get it? It's not supposed to really look at that. You're supposed to turn around. You know, you're supposed to stand up, you're supposed to walk out to the light, you know, all symbolism, I know, it's kind of tricky, but...
But it's worth the effort. Yeah. But that, you know, that's some of the beauty of what I've been getting for 2 weeks, and I've got one more week of, you know, Monday through Thursday of next week with the Prism series, is that it's not so much demythologizing, but putting the meat back on the myth's bones.
Mm.
I mean, this, you know, not just the salacious stuff. I tweeted about James Madison the other night. The reason he didn't accept his appointment to be the ambassador, the minister to The Hague, was because he had epilepsy. James Madison, the guy who wrote the Constitution for all intents and purposes, was an epileptic. And he did not dare go to sea because the tossing and the pitching and the rolling could have caused him to become, well, dead.
Yeah.
And then where's the, you know, what becomes of the fledgling United States? And that's, you know, there's so many of those little forks in the road in these last couple of weeks. And like I said, that business, Albert, about, well, democracy's breaking out all over, and we've got to do something about this. Pretty soon everybody's going to be free.
Mm-hmm.
And the background stuff on the Three-Fifths Clause and how the first time the Three-Fifths Clause came up, it was for tax purposes, and the South was screaming, oh, no, these slaves, they're not really human beings, you know. You can't tax us like they're on their foot. No, they're on, nah, Three-Fifths. And then it comes around time to figure out how we're going to apportion representation in the House. And there's the South again. Oh, these slaves, fully fledged human beings, count every one of them. Now, they can't vote, and we can kill them if we don't like them. We can do it. They're property, but you count every one of them. Because we got to have more people in the House. Hypocrites, 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 hypocrites. There's just, and again, not using your back to promote this, but because I know, you know, you've been hanging around the horn long enough that you know who Dr. Bill is. And you've heard Dr. Bill in the past when he had his own show.
Yes, sir.
And he's nothing short of magnificent. And his address, his lecture, his speech, conversation from this past Wednesday night, like I said, is just stunning. I mean, amazing.
I dare anybody
to download Dr. Bill and or go watch him on Ustream and tell me that there is a single person doing so-called liberal talk in this country, even those who are esteemed to be the smartest of the smart, and we know who we're talking about here, and tell me that that guy can even hold a candle to Bill O'Brien. And you know, here's Bill, you know, just doing what Bill does, and unassuming and humble, and then you just sit down, and the next thing you know, you're in a Maxell commercial because your hair's flying backwards. It's breathtaking. It's downhill on a bad on a mean roller coaster. I mean, you're just sitting there going, holy hell! Because these windows are opening and then the light's coming through and these Star Trek doors are going and opening up.
I love it.
I mean, I walked out of Dr. Bill's lecture Wednesday night feeling like it was kind of like being to an old time tent revival, except for everything that was going on was real. There were no snakes passed, no strychnine sipped. Nobody rolled on the floor and hollered, testify. Well, I was about half out of my seat. Testify, Brother Bill! You know, but I, you know, I was trying to maintain a modest sense of decorum, so I didn't. But you know, just to hear that much truth, that much fact, Albert, handed out, and well, sorry, I did it on your back. After all, I apologize. I didn't mean to just ride you like that.
No. I'm sold already. But anyone else, I mean, that's the thing, you know, we need everyone to know these things, or as many as possible. The more that know, the more we can push. You know, this is, you know, it's like the hidden battle that we need to desperately be informed. Because the more informed we are, the crazier they look. And, you know, I don't think they're convincing too many people, I gotta say. I mean, it's very loud, but there's no substance there. So, and I think a lot of people still see that. I mean, I know I was with my family, and my family's a certain way, and, you know, but, man, I mean, I didn't even feel anywhere near uncomfortable when my aunts, and we had a little get-together with great-grandparents and, you know, all this other stuff, and all these aunts and cousins and stuff, and I didn't feel, you know, when they said something about, well, what don't you like, they said to me. I'm like, Republicans. I don't like them. And this is why. Bah, 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 bah.
Oh, dear.
I didn't get it. I didn't, it was a good thing. There's nothing wrong. It completely is understandable. I've never heard anything. Even the guys that tried to tell me about Obamacare. He's trying to make too many people happy. He is, isn't he? That's it. And how you, he's trying to make everybody happy. Yeah, it's not the best freaking quality in the world, but it's a hell of a lot better than the alternative.
Well, it's better than trying to make everybody dead.
Exactly. Sitting there with money, putting on credit cards. You know, I mean, we can ever. I will never stop hammering Bush. He's going to be big, flat, like a on a freaking train. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
I mean, just a. I mean, it has. It's the. I mean, more and more people. Even even less Reagan's even said something about the electric current pattern. Changing, bro. Now, if we get people to notice again, you know, the.
Oh, I know, but me, Republican Party, for the fact that this is just precious, they're going to roll back the electric light bulb legislation so that consumers can pay more money. I hate that word, consumers. But, yeah, they really are. the Republican House is set to roll back legislation that would have phased out the incandescent light bulb. You got to think, this is the same party that would introduce legislation to preserve buggy whip manufacturing. I don't know, maybe they'll resurrect buggy whip manufacturing using the funds that we were going to use to build those bullet trains. You know, the ones that ain't going to be leaving the station in Birmingham anytime soon, as Reverbo has so often.
Or Madison.
Well, or Madison, you know. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, no. I mean, it's same thing here. I mean, that doesn't matter. They'll just reroute the corridor, and the states that are doing it, even like Michigan, which we all know what Michigan's like. You know, I mean, they're one of the hardest hit by this thing. They're doing it. Those states, in the long run, just like if instead of focusing on coal, use those mountains for wind, you'd be better in the future. And I mean, just, you know, it's like if we pay teachers to educate the kids, we'll be better in the future. To educate kids that they can become teachers, that they can go out into the world and educate people, and we'll have a better future. But every time, and you know, it's really funny, this is another thing, I gotta talk about the Museum of Natural History. Teddy Roosevelt, you know, I mean, and I know those are the quotes of the quotes, the creme de la creme quotes of his in that, you know, hall when you walk in the museum. But I love how he talks about government must be progressive. I don't have it on hand that I didn't memorize it, but he was a Republican, right?
Yeah, back when.
Absolutely. But it's just, you know.
But bear in mind the kind of Republican that Teddy Roosevelt was not the kind of Republican that the Republican Party was, because remember, he was McKinley's vice president. He was not supposed to ever be president.
True.
You know, we were going to the business of America's business. And, you know, that was not supposed to be in the cards. But, you know, Humphrey Bogart says in Casablanca, it looks like fate has taken cards in the game or something like that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah.
Well, Albert, I know you've got, you know, like you said, taking a long cross-country trip is like having your skull just pulled open and stretched and played with like silly putty. So, you know, hopefully you'll expand it and contract it and get it all back into shape and everything. And, you know, we'll be back to whatever normal is, schedule a week from tonight. So, you know, hide not thy light under a bushel, Albert. We'll talk soon, okay?
I hope I didn't sound too crazy.
No, not at all. No, trust me, believe me, I'm the crazy one here.
I'll just play it. All right. Be good, brother. Bye.
All right, see you, Albert. Bye now. Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. And we roll onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah.
Hey, Susan.
I just love Albert. He cracks me up. In that vein, I thought I would toss in a little piece of news that did a number on me. It seems that, well, the caging has started, of course. You know, all over the country, various states, Republicans in various states are trying to limit the ability of various people who would tend to vote Democrat to vote. And the main architect in the state of Ohio for this. He came up with a law that says you have to have a state, you have to have a driver's license in order to be able to vote. Well, it seems this man won't be voting.
No license, huh?
You see, he went over to Indiana. And what makes this super precious is he was stopped for drunk driving. And not only this...
Oh, it just keeps getting better, doesn't it?
Oh, it gets even better.
Oh, please tell me there was a transvestite prostitute in the seat next to him. Please, Susan, please.
Yeah, with a load of Viagra. And on top of that, there was video from the dash cam on the cop car.
No, really, what?
There was a prostitute in the passenger seat who was had a load of Viagra in the car, and it...
You know what? Someday somebody has got to build a cathedral of irony. And instead of, and I'm told they're not gargoyles, they're phantasmagores or something like that, because I used the word gargoyle on the program the other night. No, Bob, if there's no water coming out of them, they're not gargoyles, damn it. But whatever those creatures are, we could, the cathedral of irony could just be covered with, like, Republicans with their pants down in restrooms, or, you know, David Vitter, standing there all creepy like in his diaper, or this, you know, this guy with his prostitute holding up a bottle of Viagra. Yeah, the cathedral of irony would be a wonderful place.
Yeah, if nothing else, just for the sheer giggle factor. I know when I saw that that news item, I just sat there and completely lost it. I mean, I would just, I'm surprised somebody didn't break down my door and haul me off as a complete maniac because of the howls of laughter.
It's all one big practical joke.
This is type of thing. It's perfect. And as for the, I have a message for that anonymous person who came up with the lovely explanation for the...
Yes, let's go back to the quote real quick, shall we? The study failed to account for consanguinity, one of the most prominent sources of birth defects.
With that press release, it is obvious that his right-hand mother is left-hand son. You figured it out.
Oh, you know, I wish there were a million of us because we could really, really make life miserable for the National Mining Association right now. And they deserve it, really, in light of the fact that they've made life miserable for so many millions of Appalachian people. I mean, why does whoever this clown is, I think it's fair to ask, why does this person still have a job, and if so, why?
I just, you know, it just blows me away. I just, you know, I'm sitting here going, and then you said, thinking, oh my God, you know what's happened to the fellows?
Yeah, they've been poached into, yes. Right.
I kind of figured you did, but I'm sitting there thinking. And then all I could see in my head was that image of the kid who played the banjo in Deliverance.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh. You have a genius for that, Bob, I gotta tell you. anyway, my other thing is, please, people, send money.
Yes, and I should mention that we are now officially into your challenge. The John's $50 challenge has been met. Yours is now in play, Susan.
Good. I will cheerfully cough up the money when it reaches $100. I would love to be able to cough up that money. Please send money to Hornigit. Now, one thing I really want people to do, and this won't cost them anything. You pick up the phone and you call your senator and your representative, all of them, and you say, keep your hands security and Medicare, or you will not be able to get elected dog catcher. And you also email the White House with that same message. I'm afraid my phone calls were a little, well, laced with some rather profane language, but I was a trifle peeved. We won't go into that. But anyway, they knew I wasn't swearing at them because I was asking them to pass a message on to the White House. But just, you know, tell them, pass the message on to the White House. No, no, no.
By the way, just to back up for 1 second, Susan, so people can know where this came from on behalf of the National Mining Association.
Mm-hmm.
It came from a law firm called Crowell Mooring, a practice that spans the globe can still earth. We're among the world's most trusted and respected firms. Our practice is broad and deep, spanning the globe and crossing industries. Like many lawyers, we pride ourselves on our integrity, client relationships, and ability to win cases. But that's not why 53 of us left a major law firm in 1979 to start Crowell Mooring. We did it because we believed we could create a different kind of law firm, a place where lawyers could think differently, act differently, be themselves. What we are has much to do with what we are not. Stuffy, arrogant, closed-minded. Really? When you call the entire population of Appalachia a bunch of inbred hillbillies, you're not stuffy, arrogant, and closed-minded? Ain't that just charming?
You don't have to have a phone number, do you?
Wait a minute. We just might. Oh, look, contact us.
I'm not above.
Oh, gosh, I don't know who you'd contact because they've got offices in Washington, New York, L.A., San Francisco, Orange County, Anchorage, Alaska, London, and Brussels.
Washington.
Probably. Area code 202-624-2500. That's area code 202-624-2500. Crowell Mooring. Perpetuating hateful stereotypes about Appalachian people since at least 2011.
I will be making a phone call Monday, if for no other reason, just to yell at them for saying nasty things about my friends. Let me see if I can remember what I was. The brain has gone. CRS disease hit. Oh, dear.
I understand.
And I wanted to tell you what this was, and I can't remember it. But,
Well, throw it in an email, and it will still reach the ether. Susan, thank you for offering up the challenge, and I appreciate it. And hopefully, good things will come from it. I'll let you know. I won't if it doesn't. But if it does, I'll let you know. And hopefully before show's end, that would be really, really nice.
Yeah, it would be nice if people took it to heart and just proceeded to beat my little challenge into the ground and came up with it several times over.
It would be a beautiful thing. Thank you, Susan. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too, and give my love to Agnes.
Sure will. Bye now.
Okay. Bye bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon and onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, so this Bachman apparently signed this pledge some sort of anti-porn, anti-Sharia pledge, but get this. One part of it says slavery had a disastrous impact on African-American families, yet sadly, a child born into slavery in 1860 was more likely to be raised by his mother and father in a two-parent household than was an African-American baby born after the election of the USA's first African-American president. Oh, dear God.
Do I go for the liquor bottle now, or does it get worse?
No, it's just it's incredible. It's just like, what the fuck? I'm sorry.
That's one of those moments.
I don't know, but I am, like, tripping. I mean,
can we just have a moment here? Can we acknowledge the fact that there was no such thing as a slave household?
Whatever. The whole thing is just beyond the beyonds. But I mean, the sort of the implications are just. I mean, it's just sick, as well as historically fucked up. But it's just, it's just her problems with. She don't know much about slavery. She got the founders fighting it. Now, it's
No. She's got John Quincy Adams fighting it.
Well, it's what? Oh, right. She's really disturbing. Anyway, I just thought I'd share that because I was like,
there's just one after, and it's going to be like this for a year or so.
Listen,
all we can do is strap in, Sandra, because this stuff's just going to come boiling out. And whatever, because that's what, this is a double barrel. The Republicans are approaching this as it's a double barreled shotgun filled with wet bubble gum. Whatever sticks.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's just beyond the beyonds. But, on to, the at least the biggest story for me is this fool who is looking at possibly double-digit unemployment numbers and planning on running on doing what George Bush couldn't do, which is cut Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare. I mean, hello. One term much? What the hell?
I don't even know what to say.
It's too over the top.
I know. I'm just making random noises over this sort of just that.
Yeah,
but I used to think that, I mean, you've heard me, given the quality of the right wing field, that there's Michelle Bachmann, Herman Cain, really Herman, Newt Gingrich, that there was really nobody they could put up that could beat him.
We
never considered the fact that he might beat himself.
Oh my God, no! I mean, VSPs, the various serious people that are surrounding his ass, he need to go out a bit. This shit is unbelievable. He is gloating and seems to be quite pleased about the prospect of tackling entitlement. What planet?
Well, but let's go back to a long ago conversation. Well, not that long ago, right after we got back from the lib boat. And that thing that Alan Grayson said.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, the thing is, though, it's just really incredibly frightening what's going on in the economy, though, because that jobs report was like, woo, 18,000. 18,000 jobs, and, some of the other numbers in that report are really disturbing, like serious wage dropping and week and hourly work. It dropped 10% or something real crazy.
Here's one that gave me the blind shakes. Over 500,000 government jobs have disappeared since the inauguration.
Yeah. Right, that was it was 38, and they cut 39,000 government jobs just in this reporting period. I mean, and we have to look at this expansionary austerity in the face of no demand in the economy, and they think that this is going to, I don't know what they think is going to happen, but they're going to be in a double dip recession is what they're going to be. I don't mean
if not already. If not already.
I don't mean 1.8. No, I'm talking when the shit goes negative. I think it's a depression personally, but I mean their little official numbers are going to start unwinding for real though, because there's no QE, nothing now. All the fiscal stimulus is pretty much gone. His HAMP program, shit. And now this fool is up there talking about we need to cut entitlements. I mean, it's just like, wow. He's turning out to be... And what I wrote to you is the disturbing thing is the fact that this man is not just going to be an island unto himself. He risks destroying what's left of the Democratic Party. I'm serious. I don't care if I sound alarmist, but if this shit comes to pass, what is the point of the Democratic Party, for real?
Well, you know, I sent you that Salon article this morning because it was early, and I thought, you know, I'm tired of this excuse-making. You know, Salon with somebody writing an essay saying he's not really going to touch Medicare and Social Security. He's doing this because he knows that the Republicans will never agree to the cuts.
Oh, please. I mean,
well, God almighty, if I'm a Republican, then the first thing I do is I say, okay, fine. Because which do they want more, tax cuts or to kill Medicare and Social Security? I think you and I know what that answer is pretty easy, don't we?
Yeah, I know, but it's absurd because since the man seems to be fixated on, you know, entitlement reforms and, you know, grab your wallets when you the Orwellianness. Can we agree that the Obama administration is the most Orwellian administration yet? Please. They are really their messaging and their promotion, all it is so Orwellian, from the strengthening of entitlements to the no wars war. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, the no hostilities.
Right, you know, it's all doublespeak. For I just don't really understand I don't understand what they think. And the other thing that's killing me was that Puffer or whatever his name is talking about how
David Plouffe. Yeah.
Yeah, Plouffe. Oh, Americans aren't gonna be. I mean, come on. And then some freaks trying to. Oh well, it's out of context. And I'm like, context my ass. Who cares? He said the American people won't be concerned about unemployment. Oh, when it's 12, 13, 14, 15, 20% fool, we won't care?
Yeah, the actual quote, the average American does not view the economy through the prism of GDP or unemployment rates or even monthly jobs numbers. People won't vote based on the unemployment rate. They're going to vote based on how do I feel about my own situation. Do I believe the president makes decisions based on me and my family?
That's, ain't nobody gonna be thinking that big ass paragraph. I'm thinking, where are the fucking jobs?
Bingo.
That's a sentence.
We are a nation that thinks in bumper stickers, Sandra.
I'm like, they tripping. I was looking at that and I thought, my God, we are in so much trouble. We are in deep shit. Because that jobs report, that's like stunning. Even with that, usually they rise when the jobs are, but you know, I think people are. Anyway, it's kind of time to panic, I swear to God. Listen, another thing, that News of the World story is interesting, but it's also interesting that British Gas raises their prices 18 and 16%, Bob.
Whoa.
And that was a 7% last month. Hello?
25%?
That's death. That's death for people, for some people. Anyway. I just thought that was interesting.
Well, isn't it interesting that the world thing is dominating the British discussion and debate at the same time that flies under the radar?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's sort of like the Friday dump, which reminds me of that. The federal government has said marijuana has no accepted medical use. Thank you, Obama administration, right? Good Jesus. Did you hear about that?
Yes, I did. And
I mean, the thing is, people...
How about glaucoma?
Oh, no. The administrator of the DEA is a rabid anti-pot person. That's the thing that I was always amazed by when it's in, I think it's a holdover from the Bush, Michelle Lionheart. I just heard that she was straight up anti-pot. So, anyway.
Well, I gotta just to go to the News of the World story for a second. I gotta give some props here to David in Tennessee, because I saw something in the New York Times this morning in the story about world thing and just what you know, what the whole thing means in there's that word in context. But I, you know, it was two pages on the interweb tubes, Sandra. And so I went into page two, and I mentioned this because you know, when somebody accurately predicts how things are going to play out, I love it, because I don't hear it happening on a lot of other shows or anything. But I was sitting having my morning cup of decaf, getting ready to clear out of the hotel down in Princeton, and I read this and it just blew me away. Let me see. So they're gonna shut down the News of the World, right? Well, this paragraph pops up late in the story. The person close to Mr. Murdoch predicted that after 6 months or so, News International would reopen the News of the World Sunday edition of its Daily Sun tabloid. Some of the 200 people who lost their jobs at the World tabloid could then be rehired at the new Sunday paper. It would be a rebadging exercise rather than a shutting down, the person said, meaning that the company could put a new badge or name tag on the old product. Well, you're gonna appreciate this, because I got the now that was today's New York Times. I got this yesterday afternoon. David writing, does anybody think for 1 second Rupert and mini him, or little Jimmy Murdoch, will truly stop printing that rag? I make the over-under at 3 editions off the stands, and little Jimmy Murdoch, bowing to the demands of our royal readers to bring it back, we give you News from the World. Almost identical logo, same staff, and for damn sure the same filth. Wait and watch. This is a spoof of the highest order. No shit. No effing way the Murdoch's family's going to axe a newspaper cash cow like the News of the World and do it over being caught acting like gutter scum. Murdoch's have no shame. This is a great line. Murdoch's have no shame, only. So kind of a wow and a toaster moment. You know, no, this is all tempest in a teapot, because that filthy rag is not going to go away. And journalism is not going to be reformed.
Well, no, there's nothing like that, but, you know, they better hurry up and hire them people up, because they got some tweets. I retweeted, you know, they got a tweet going, because they're not going to be going down. If they're going down, they're taking other people with them. So I'm a follower.
And the other thing out of this story for me is that if anybody thinks that this is not institutional policy, not just for the UK arms of the UK tentacles of the Murdoch the sea monster, but for the entire operation, no. See, this is the kind. I mean, just take a turn around and look backward at the Wiener business, the Anthony Wiener business. Take a turn and look back at what's his name. He's on CNN now. He was the Spitzer, Elliot Spitzer. These things don't just happen.
Well, what about Strauss-Kahn?
Right, sure. Exactly.
The thing is about this in England, though, because the British state is really a state, you know what I'm saying? It's in a sense, you're like, good Jesus. Everything is so centralized. So the direct connection between Murdoch and the Tories or whatever government is in power is so standing out right now. That's why they're freaking out, because the equivalent of Robin Gibbs was arrested, Bob. Do you understand?
Yes.
The spokesperson for Cameron, which would have been like Gibbs under Obama, was hauled on out. And not only that, the police is way up in it. They don't know who they're going to be arresting. Everyone's freaking out, and people are pissed off, because it's like, oh, wait one damn minute. You hacked into some poor people's phones who thought people was alive when they were dead and erasing that. I mean, it was horrible. It's horrifying if you read what went down, right?
Right.
It's disgusting.
What's particularly telling is that, as usual, they trotted out this was a one-off. This was a rogue, out of, we didn't have it. No, Oh,
it's,
wait.
You know, it's but you know it's blown up. It's
Yeah, it has blown up.
It's out of control of the Murdoch. I mean, the son is whatever his name is, talking all kinds of... They don't know what the hell... I think it's the problem, because now their son merger thing is at big risk. They are at risk. The shares are falling. It's a beautiful thing to behold. I'm sorry. I think it's hilarious.
I would love it. And I don't fully understand how the civil justice system works in Great Britain, but this poor little girl's parents.
Oh,
should I hope and you know they I don't think Great Britain has do they have the concept of punitive damages?
They don't have no First Amendment. That's all you need to know about Britain. So party time.
It should be party time, and it's one of those places where the guy with the funny hair, who wears the funny hair, walks in front of either a judge or a jury and says, "Here's what I want you to do. I want you to write down the number one. And I want you to start using whichever hand you write with, your left or your right, I want you to start putting zeros after that one. And when the hand that you write with gets tired of writing zeros, switch hands and write some more."
And see, keep in mind that this is also amazing because keep in mind it's in the context of severe disdain and hatred for the elites over there. You see what I'm saying? With their cuts, banking, and now you have this bitch, and it's just all a perfect storm. Big doings over in England. This shit ain't going away because there's a lot of things feeding into it. The public is not pleased. The people are not happy.
And it would suit me just fine if their first Robespierre-esque act would be to make Rupert Murdoch into a pauper.
Well, if they can just cancel that Sky deal first, that would be a start. I mean, you know, slow his role on the merging scene would be a start, and this is going to diminish his power because, you know, institutions were completely petrified of Murdoch. That was part of the problem. And now this, because so much of it has a judicial aspect now, it is kind of out of their hands in a way. I mean, we'll see. I never tire of, you know, how centralized, you know, the Britain is, so you can watch it. It's very easy to sort of connect the dots there.
Well, see, I watched that passage of Question Time earlier. I saw it over at Crooks and Liars with David Cameron kind of sitting there with, trying to scream his sort of shout his way out or being shouted down at. I mean, I've seen some rowdy Question Times, but this was pretty ugly.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just think, I mean, the scandal is bad enough, but I mean, if you combine it with everything else that's going on, and I will go so far as connect this 18% raise in fuel to it all too. You see what I'm saying? It's just not good. I just hope that he has to pull back a bit though, because he has too much power. It's really scary.
Absolutely, and you're right. The first step is the Sky deal.
Yeah.
Because, well, it just can't happen. And it's not one of those things you can wait 6 months and it'll blow over because, like you said, there's a lot of angry people over this who are going to have long memories over it. You can make an argument that they had a hand in the killing of this little girl.
Well, exactly. No. No, that's what I mean. It's horrific. That's why it was a tipping point. People are like, that's it. You know what I mean? And that's why the Cameron government had to respond, because it was like, oh, shit. You know, we're not talking about little games among the elites like they play. You see what I mean?
No, this isn't something embarrassing to the Royal House of Windsor.
Right. Or to some actor or some whoever muckety-muck. This is just straight up awful, horrifying. So, I mean, we'll see how it goes. I don't know. I just think, it is. But, you know, for anyone who thinks that it's an international conglomerate, so, you know, let's turn our eyes to here. And I'm sure it's the same kind of thing, you know?
Right. And I'd love to, you know, maybe if there's any vestige of journalism left in this country, dare I even say it. Let's get some people with some, you know, some number crunching and some real research skills and start going backwards over all these things. And there are people who have created resources about Fox, you know, going all the way back to that brilliant documentary Outfoxed.
Yes.
And come forward and just look for the symptoms that same sort of institutional slime and sleaze is alive and well inside that operation here. Or at, you know, it's the New York Post, right?
Yeah.
That he owns. See if the same kind of dirty business isn't taking place there.
Oh, I know. Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's just sort of, it's just so decrepit. All these institutions are totally bankrupt and corrupt. It's incredible. But anyway, I'm sort of, you know, I'm still really, I'm just freaking out still about this shock doctrine debt ceiling hell that we're a part of. I mean, they're supposed to stay all weekend for their grand bargain. And I mean, is Obama going to come out and say, oh, we have a deal and guess what? We've cut all the entitlements. I mean, how is that going to be packaged? I'm just confused.
It doesn't seem to be playing well inside so-called progressive or even middle-class circles.
No. But I get the. I mean, because I actually called my Congress critter, and I barely got it out of my mouth. No, we're not voting for it. Okay.
Okay. Good. Right.
You know, so I basically just said so, and it was like no. So I thought that was interesting. You see what I mean?
Yeah. Well, even the ordinarily non-responsive political types here in West Virginia, kind of have to. At least the Democrats kind of have to get on board, because there's no. Well, and you know, Shelley Moore Capito, who is a Republican, even she can't say, well, you know, we've got to do this because this is West Virginia. This is a state where a significant portion of the population makes it from the first of the month to the first of the month because of so-called entitlements.
Well, no, but the thing is, that's what I mean about the bubble. I'm sort of saying there's such a huge number of people who use these programs. I mean, the sort of Medicaid, which one is for low-income people?
Medicaid.
You know, are they serious? They don't even know how many people utilize the service. I mean, that's how widespread it is. And if they're going to cut it, what do they think is going to happen? And why would they want to be taking money out of the economy? I just don't understand the political calculus.
It evades me as well, but this is you know, I hate to reference him because he is so repulsive, but of all the people to draw the ire of the right wing lately, the one that I found almost shocking was David Brooks. Now, you and I have had conversations about David Brooks.
Yeah, you know it. I'm not a fan, but yeah, he
did you see the rock that he dropped early this week?
He went off. Yeah, I was like, damn, fool. Yeah, you could tell the reading for us, and he just knew them freaks wouldn't even accept it. I was rolling. But it was really scary, because what he was talking about is what do you call the Republican Party? Some sort of protest movement or something?
It was really funny.
He just called it some, like it was like sort of a war on terror type of.
Yeah, he said you could call it, you know, fill in the blank, and I mean, this is how the column ends. You could call it whatever the phrase was, and you'd be right.
Right. No. It definitely.
Well, no. See, I think he's flipping out because, well, I mean, frankly, Sandra, if you and I are David Brooks, we're David Brooks. You know, this is the guy who should be a Republican.
Right. Well, no.
And he sees these weird little teabaggers out there and their enablers as taking his party away from him.
Well, this is the same guy who was drooling over, I think, was it Obama's pant leg? I mean, he's a real strange person. He's just an elite, and I just think he's freaking out because his party isn't based in, you know, it's just...
His party isn't his party anymore. His party's been co-opted by the Klan.
Right. So, you know, and so that sort of works against the grain for types like him. And who's that other guy? Huntsman?
Oh, John Hunt. Yeah.
Yeah, he's another one of those types, you know, and they're all like.
Huntsman was reasonable enough, you know, to be a member of the Obama administration. Of course, he's running like hell from it now.
Well, no, but yeah, I know, but they're not going to elect someone like him. He's done. They wouldn't even elect Nixon. Was it Albert talking about Nixon?
Yeah.
Now, this is what I would vote for Nixon, even if he ran against Obama. Sorry, I said it.
But you know, you're not. but you know, Nixon. Nixon was a creepy little dude with paranoid delusions about commies, but and so crooked that when he died they had to screw him into the dirt because he was too crooked to bury laying down. But as I've heard some people say who remember it his administration well, you know, you could do business with Richard Nixon.
Listen. He ain't no creepier than blackface shredding the safety net. Sorry.
Well, I'll give you. You know, he's got something over. He's got something over President Not Sure. He is the last president, perhaps the only. No, not the only, but the last president ever to propose the concept of a mandatory living wage in the United States. Did you know that?
Yeah, he was all into minimum income, too. I mean, you know, dude was like...
Yeah, that's the living wage.
Yeah, he still respected the New Deal. That was the sort of demarcation there. The Republicans who came after Roosevelt respected the basic tenets of the New Deal. You know, then you had Reagan. But then it was Clinton who actually started dismantling it. Is someone going to shoot me?
No, I don't think so.
And so now we have Nixon going to China here in the form of Obama talking about there's a moment that only comes around once in a while when you can do these things, and I'm going to do it. I'm like, oh, my God.
And like I said, I can't help it. I keep going back to that Alan Grayson remark and going back and going back. Mr. President, if you could do anything you wanted to, what would you do?
Right, and don't forget
entitlement reform.
Chicago shock doctrine, ground zero. That's not removed from me.
No.
Shit.
I would not. How can I say this? Because somebody out there's going, but Bob, I graduated from the University of Chicago. I wouldn't trust a University of Chicago grad who graduated in English. Because I'm sure that they've got, the Strauss Friedman School has gotten its hooks into everything in that university. There's nowhere that's safe.
It's funny you should mention that because I had a classmate in one of, you know, this degree that I'm doing, and, you know, she graduated from the University of Chicago, and I sure was like, ew. I mean, just.
Yeah, did you kind of look a little askance at her?
Yeah, fisheye and thinking, oh, yikes. Anyway, that's not right, but I agree with you. And speaking of that Strauss, yeah, listen, you know, I'm sure Madison would be a big fan, you know?
You know, the idea that James Madison Center at Princeton University cites as their... what are they? Their patron saint, Strauss. It's mind blowing. That's when Dr. Bill was tying it all up Wednesday night. I'm going, whoa, no, really?
Yeah. Oh no. Well, no. But come on, with the whole sort of private liberty versus public liberty, Shays Rebellion. Let's go run and lock ourselves in a room so we can write up this Constitution to protect my shit.
Right, because that damn democracy ain't looking like so much fun after all.
And was a huge anti, you know, he was a real scared of the people. Now, I mean, I always enjoy reading Madison because he was quite brilliant. But yeah,
remember he's 5'2".
Right. Well, oh, God, when you get those little factoids about history, that always sort of adds to the whole package.
You know, and I'm not being mean to people who are height challenged or whatever, but James Madison is 5 feet two running around with George Washington, who is 6 feet three. I mean, can you imagine seeing those two standing together?
Oh, God, well, see, yeah, well, I didn't realize he was that short, because I always...
Oh, he was a little tiny guy.
I was always fisheyeing Adams, too. He was another one that was fairly fascist in his thinking, you know, on some level.
Oh, without a doubt. And so, you know, you've got some of that psychologically verified business going on, you know, with the small guy. But
yeah.
And so, you know, there's a lot of compensating going on. He does it with his brains. You know, he's a son of a... I mean, I loved, my God, listening to John Kaminsky just talk about all these guys. You know, last you know, he never, Dr. Kaminsky never consults a note. When he's talking to you about these guys, it sounds like he's talking about somebody he had dinner with last week. And for all intents and purposes, Sandra, he did, because he's lived with every word they've written for the last 40 years of his life or more. And so, you know, if you want to know about Madison, if you want to know about the ratification of the Constitution and the whys and the wherefores, he's the guy to go to.
Right.
And that's why it's so mind-blowing just to have him in the room. And you know, I asked him a question over breakfast one day. I said, you know, we had the Civil War. And there was horrible bloodshed, but we came out of it somehow. But I'm beginning to wonder, and I was asking this as a serious and a legitimate question. I said, I'm wondering if the framers took into account everything but these people of absolute bad will, idiots and malefactors. And has the scenario finally arisen that they never dreamt would occur? And are we going to get into something we can't get ourselves out of? And looked at me and said, it could well be. It was just like, you know, sort of, suddenly I found myself snorting my decaf.
Well, I mean, I don't think they could imagine just the corporate power was, you know, is sort of something that is challenging.
But, I mean, the stories he told, for instance, about Hamilton and the bonds, about, you know, that first round of bonds that went out for veterans and everything, and if you hold it, it's going to pay 6% interest. And then, I think Dr. Bill mentioned it as well. I mean, the dirty dealings in this country have a long, filthy history, Sandra. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
And this bond business... Those original bonds were worthless. So Hamilton comes up with this deal, and Dr. Bill did talk about it, and it gets around in inside circles that there's going to be a new bond issue. And all of these bonds are going to be replaced by new bonds. And they're suddenly going to have real value. And so, like, for instance, Dr. Bill mentions Maryland. He said in Maryland you go around, and he said these lists exist of people redeeming these, you know, revolution bonds. And he said when you see the redemption list, it's the same 16 names over and over and over again. And what they'd done is they had gone around to these Revolutionary War veteran bondholders and said, that thing's not worth shit. But I tell you what, I'll give you 10 cents on the dollar. Right now. I'll give you $500 for it. Right now. And, you know, old dude working his farm does not have any clue of what's coming down the pike. And so he says, $500 in my hand right now? Sure. Where do I sign?
Familiar.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Yeah, no. Oh, God. You know, the inside. Yeah. Oh, God.
And so in the stroke of in a few pen strokes, they had completely redistributed debt inside the fledgling United States. And guess who had all the value? The commercial class.
The private liberty people, right?
Exactly. The ones that met behind closed doors to protect their shit.
Yes. You know, I'm definitely... I got that link that you sent me. I think I'll definitely listen to it while I'm... folding clothes.
Oh, it's worth it, because by the time you get done folding and Bill reaches the the point of it all, you're going to be screaming. I had like little tweets to me. Bob, send me the link. I got to get this around to my friends. They're going to freak.
Listen, the battery's going, so I got to
right.
go. But
you have a great weekend, Sandra.
You too.
All right, bye now. I'm not sure if it's up at White Rose yet. If it's not, go over and look on Ustream. It'll be several hours of your life. But by the time they're over, I don't think you're going to be sending me emails going, Bob, why'd you waste my time? Because you're going to wind up sending me emails going, thank you, Bob. Thank you, Dr. Bill. Thank you, Dr. Kaminsky. Because we have this sort of cartoon stylized version of the history of the United States. And it's not even remotely related to reality. The Constitution was not conceived as a means of assuring liberty to anyone. It was conceived as a means of property protection and liberty suppression. Shay's rebellion scared them out of the power and the money. Because they suddenly looked up and went, wait a minute. All these yokels took us seriously with that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness bullshit. Holy hell. And so, there they were running around shorting the public debt 2 centuries ago. And we find ourselves scratching our heads at the idea that a shitbird like Eric Cantor, leave Britney alone, would be doing it in 2011. And because the other side has no rational resemblance to honor, to integrity, or even intelligence. You know, one of the things that Dr. Kaminsky pointed out that frustrated James Madison the most was that he didn't see any genius. He saw in the formation of the state legislatures and even in the Congress the same petty, grasping, scratching, scraping, grubbing little things that were there before. And so when he writes Federalist Number 10 and he talks about factions and says it's okay to have factions, that's a capitulation. That is him surrendering any grand notions that he had about what the country could be as an entity independent from Great Britain. And so we still have those same petty, grubbing, grasping, scraping, grubbing little creatures inhabiting our government. I mean, I'll go ahead and say this, and I don't care. Look at your community. Look at the area that is represented in your congressional district. And look at the people you know. Look at the people who are studied. Look at the people who are of serious thought. Look at the people who pay attention to what really matters in this world and who think big things and who try to think out 20, 30, 50, 100, 500 years. Are any of them in the Congress of the United States or the Senate of the United States? With very few exceptions, I would hazard that the guess is no. There is not a single member of West Virginia's congressional delegation, for instance, who has a better mind or more goodwill or more dedication to the principles of decency and integrity that should be the foundation of this country than Dr. O'Brien. There is not a single member of our congressional delegation in the state who is his intellectual equal. But they're in Congress, they're in the House, they're in the Senate, scraping and scrabbing and grabbing and grasping and screeding and wheedling and blech. While the great people are just begging people to try to pay attention to where they are. Hey, where are we? And why am I in this handbasket? Because those tiny, small, petty creatures who inhabit the Congress can't even be persuaded to believe, see that word, can't even be persuaded to comprehend real hard facts when those facts are presented directly to them. I mentioned Eric Leave Brittany Alone Cantor a minute ago. We all know now from a variety of sources, from Salon to the Wall Street Journal, that Eric Cantor is significantly, if not heavily, invested and that shorts Treasury bills. In much simpler terms, Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader of the United States, is significantly invested in bets that the United States will go south on its own debt. Enter Representative Pete Olson, a Republican from Texas, who was confronted about this fact by Lee Fong from Think Progress. Here's the audio.
Congressman, Salon, the online newspaper, reported that Congressman Cantor is invested in an ETF that basically shorts U.S. Treasury notes, meaning that if there is a default, because negotiations break down or for whatever reason, he makes a lot of money. Do you think that's an ethical thing to do?
I can't give any comment to that. I have no knowledge about that. Eric Cantor is a great guy. He has the highest ethics. I have a lot of doubts about the veracity of that report on the Salon.
So you haven't heard that he actually is invested in an ETF that shorts U.S. Treasury?
I've not heard anything about that. Again, the Eric Cantor,
well,
I know...
If that is true, do you think that's a responsible thing to do?
I'm not going to go down that road because I don't think it's true. The Eric Cantor I know is one of the most ethical members of Congress, and I'm not going to comment on Salon thing because I don't feel I have no knowledge of it. Again, it's not the man's character that I know, not the Eric Cantor that I know. I'm not going to comment on it.
La 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 la, can't hear you, can't hear you, can't hear you, la 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 la. Now we go from there to one of the Republican Party's real loonies. Therefore, he is regarded as a leading light of that clavern. I'm talking about Representative Paul Brown of Georgia. Now, we know that we've got a lot of Republicans running around saying, well, hell, we ain't going to raise the debt ceiling unless we get the tax monkey off the rich people and the corporations' backs. We're tired of carrying all your poor asses. They don't deserve it. They're good, upstanding, patriotic Americans, damn it. Well, Paul Brown has followed that line of argument to its irrational conclusion. To wit.
The thing is, American people are demanding something different from Congress. We're overextended, we're overspending, now we have to start reducing the debt, and it's just absolutely critical. Continuing this madness of raising the debt ceiling so government can spend more money is not done very well, and we need to do something different. And so that's what my bill is designed to do. to lower the debt ceiling down to $13 trillion so Congress can start the business of doing what families and businesses and even state and local governments do, and that's cut up the credit cards, tighten our belts, and reduce the spending and start paying off the debt. It's absolutely critical if we're going to produce a strong economy and jobs out there today in the private sector, and that's exactly what my bill is written and will do once it's passed into law.
You know, Congressman, one of the things that we talk a lot about is the fact that over the last 30 years, we've just been getting ourselves into greater and greater and greater amounts of debt. Do we have to erase all of that in such a short period of time? I mean, can't we take a step in the right direction and then take several more steps in the right direction and sort of have a little bit more of a longer-term approach rather than before August 2nd, making a complete 180 here?
Well, I agree with you. In fact, my bill is guaranteed to do that. It reduces federal debt by $1.3 trillion. It doesn't start until October 1st, so the rest of this year we can start cutting spending is absolutely critical. We're heading towards an economic emergency. We're on a high-speed train going 90 miles an hour towards an economic cliff.
Aren't you just charmed by the fact that he uses the high-speed train reference? No, Representative Brown, we are not on a high-speed train because your party don't want none of them. Ouch.
Slowing it down to 75 miles an hour or even speeding it up to 120, neither one of those are going to prevent us from going off the cliff. We've got to start paying down the debt. We have to stop the outrageous spending that's going on here in Washington. Both parties have been guilty. It's over the last decade, we've raised the debt ceiling 16 times.
Yeah.
That hasn't worked out very
well. Who did that? I'm just asking. 16 times. Yeah, that's how he does. That's why that throwaway about, you know, both parties have done it. Because his party did it a whole lot more often.
Well, we need to do something that is very much different, and that's what my bill does. It lowers the debt ceiling, so we'll start paying off the debt.
Are you giving up a little bit on revenues on that side? Will you, whether it's tax increases, whether it's closing loopholes, will you give up a little there?
Neil, the CBO has recently said that we don't have a problem with revenues. The problem is the amount of spending that the federal government's doing. Everything needs to be on the table.
Now, see, that's one of those moments. That's one of those Murdoch moments on Fox, Radio Rwanda. The CBO said no such thing. We have a revenue problem because Paul Brown's buddies don't want to pay what it takes to protect their sorry asses. Really. But because it's Fox, Paul Brown knows that he can say anything he wants to. He can lie outright. And unlike the Congresses of the late 18th and early 19th century, nobody's going to be standing there with a cane and a glove to call him a blackguard or a poltroon and start beating the tar out of him with the cane. He can, in short, lie with impunity.
In fact, the president last night just said that he's going to look at everything. He's offered $3 to $4 trillion worth of spending cuts. Let's go ahead and make those cuts. It's absolutely critical for the future of this nation, for the economic future of this nation. We are taxing our job creators out of business. We've got to leave dollars in the hands of those people who create a strong economy, and that's small businesses all across this nation. So raising taxes is not going to do anything but be a tax on jobs, and we'll have less jobs by raising taxes. So if we do anything, we need to lower taxes on small businesses so that they can create jobs, so that they can buy inventory and create a stronger economy, and then they'll have more revenue.
I think a lot of our viewers would agree with you. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people on Capitol Hill won't, and that's why we're not going to get anything done by August 2nd, at least anyways. Congressman Brown, always good chatting with you. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, always good. Notice the meme being offered up? Nothing is going to happen by August the 2nd. My God. What if your well-being is on the menu? What if my well-being and that of my family is on the menu? And the Republican Party goes contrary
to the 11-dimensional chess move and says, deal. Deal. Who gets cut? Because this knife is very sharp. And it's, no, it's a sword. Who gets cut? Keep hearing about entitlements, but next to nothing about the Pentagon. Reminded me of something Reverbo sent along. He said, in regard to the ongoing budget battles and the Republicans and, as usual, too many Democrats' total opposition to their or their wealthy corporate benefactors' assistance in fixing this mess, it's all such a simple no-brainer. If we lived in a compassionate country that put their people first and the people actually had any legislative clout, we'd tell our elected officials, those that still need told, to bring the nation's credit card into line by cutting the policies and programs that perpetuated death and keep, if not fortify, those programs designed to sustain life. Only we don't. And all this time, says Reverbo, and all this time, I never knew that Social Security and Medicare were just more handouts to deadbeats. Because, see, that's how the Republicans view you and me. We're not rich enough to be real. We're just deadbeats. And consequently, the question that Sandra asked about the cuts to Medicaid, we don't even know who's... It doesn't matter, because we're deadbeats. We are surplus population. Especially those of us who are deemed unemployable. Those of us of age greater than 47... I think that is 48 maybe, is where the Age Discrimination and Employment Act designates the beginning of older worker. You're not even, most of them are 99ers? Hell, I'm not even a 99er. I'm way past that. I'm not even a discouraged worker. I, and many of you, are simply surplus population. Not contributing enough to the pockets of the wealthy, and therefore not very damned well likely to be of any real consequence in the debate. Sandra noting by email, add this one to our list of hideous phrases, on the effing table. I'm sick of hearing it. That's why I keep saying on the menu. It was something I heard Rick Smith say. He'll be coming along in about 45 minutes. If you're not on the table, you're on the menu. We're not on the table. Medicare, Social Security, it's not on the table. It is us. Our very real, in many instances very worried, very fragile lives that are on the menu. Filet de Bob. Remoulade of Susan. Charcuterie. Of Reverbo. And everyone else. See, we know what Republicans are like. And we expect it of them. There were certain things we did not expect of Barack Obama. I got one of those fundraising emails today from Robbie Mook, M-O-O-K, at dccc at dccc.org. Friend! Did you miss my email last night? Take a look below. God, I get... No, never mind. Republicans want to cut Social Security and Medicare to pay for tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. This is unacceptable. In just over 12 hours, more than 75,000 people have signed our petition standing with House Democrats against Speaker Boehner and Republicans' disgraceful plan. Help us reach 100,000 signatures by the end of the day. With your help, we can make sure the Republicans don't take away the benefits that Americans have earned. Doesn't someone else's name belong on that email? Because I don't think it's... the news stories I've been reading haven't been... I mean, we know the Republicans want to cut Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid. They would eliminate them altogether if they could have their way, just like they would eliminate taxation entirely upon their constituency, you know, the millionaire crowd and the corporate crowd, if they could. But the distressing thing in this mix is that if we are to believe the for-profit media, and you know that's a fitting caveat. But if we are to believe the for-profit media, the president of the United States, ostensibly a Democrat, is a part of that mix that wants to reform entitlements. That's another word for screw the deadbeats. Because no matter how hard we work, no matter the gravity, no matter the desperation of our day-to-day existences, no matter the struggle, no matter the passion that we bring to our American-ness, we are in the eyes of a lot of people who, to coin a phrase from Sandra, don't get out much. We're deadbeats and surplus population. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, it's Richard.
Hey, Richard, what's up?
Well, I'm about 80 miles southwest of Sandra, so just thought I'd mention it that way. I think I missed a story yesterday. What's going on with Social Security?
It is only the news that President Obama says that he's willing to look at cuts to Social Security and Medicare in exchange for so-called revenue increases from the Republicans.
Well, I believe our president is a Republican. I mean, I can't pretend anymore. I just don't know where to go from there. I've been looking for a story about this. A woman I know called me in a panic yesterday. I receive Social Security. It's very important to me. And I have not gotten a cost of living increase in 3 years. It's pretty serious. I mean, when onions hit $2 a pound here, I started to wonder who is responsible for deciding how much money people are going to get on Social Security. I don't know the answer. Do you?
I guess I don't.
I'm not quite sure. Even find out. I suppose I could dump, you know, my librarian, my local librarian, and start to find out, because it's pretty serious. It's not like I make a fortune off Social Security. The next thing that's on my plate right now is the great importance of taking some of this framing away from the Republicans. We must do this. Sorry, that was...
No, I heard me. Yeah. But that's okay. No worries.
Yeah, that was the chat room. The thing is that I think that, you know, we respond a lot to the outrages. The right wing presents us with an outrage every single day. And I think that we should realize that this is going to happen. It's been happening. There's nothing new. And I feel that we need to take a real overview of what the situation
is. Does it feel like a foregone conclusion to you, Richard?
What?
Were you merely talking about the way the Republicans put out some filthy frame every day? Or are you talking about Medicare and Social Security that they're
okay,
really going...
I'm talking about two different things. I'll get back to it. The Republicans, they do a couple of things. One is that they're very, very good at framing and sloganeering. They got us whipped on these. And they're going to keep doing it. They are attackers. You know, whenever there's a Democrat in the White House, they just attack ruthlessly every single day. And so we shouldn't be reacting to those attacks, because that's what they're going to do. We should be stalemating them, you know, going on the aggressive. We have to be as aggressive as they are. And you know, and stop.
But how do you be aggressive, Richard, when you're dealing with a president who is talking about wanting to do what George Bush couldn't get done?
I know, and I think the thing is, we have to threaten him.
I mean, how do you message on that's okay because you're a Democrat? And I mean, I'm not being an ass to you.
No, I know that. I know that. I don't know. Okay, let me leave Obama out of this for the time being. Obama, I think, needs to be reminded, for example, from me, that he's been so depressing to me that I just can't get it up to go vote for him again. You know, I think we have to threaten these politicians who have really betrayed us, and he has betrayed us. There's no doubt about that. That, you know, if they want to play, they have to come back to us, their constituents, the people who put them over the top, you know, and realize that we're their ticket to the next election. So, you know, I do not know what motivates Obama. He's a mystery to me. But I don't think he doesn't have the political smarts of, let's say, a Lyndon Johnson. So I think that we need to really push him very hard. I think the thing that we have, the tool that we have about our politicians is to make them afraid of us.
But in what form? Because I go back to the ancient wise words of, I believe it was Emma Goldman,
yeah,
who said if voting worked, it would be illegal.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing we have that would make them afraid of us, and for me to suggest anything that would make them really afraid of us would get my ass hauled away.
Well,
hence I will not make that suggestion, because you see, you and I, Richard, we're liberals, we're progressives.
Absolutely.
We don't get the breaks that the right wingers get. Do you remember the brick through the windows campaign that went on during the election season past, when right wingers were and one was a particularly pasty faced, doughy, fat ass slob from Alabama, and he was suggesting, and people took him up on it, that they start putting rocks and bricks through liberal Democrats' office windows, and they did.
Well,
and to the best of my knowledge, he is still enjoying his freedom.
No, I don't doubt it. We are opposed by a lot of thugs. And
all I'm pointing out is that if you and I start talking like that, if you and I went up to, say, Eric Leave Britney Alone Cantor or John Boehner and hocked up a big loogie and put it right on his pretty bespoke suit, we would go away in chains and we would never be heard from again.
Well,
now, Pig Lickins and Teabaggers can do that, and they just say, I was expressing, I never did spit on that black man.
No,
even though there's video showing him doing it.
I don't like this argument, because that's not us. You know, we don't do that, but we need to call attention to these people. We need to be aggressive the way we can be aggressive, and I don't think that we're doing that as much as we could. And we need to be very smart, you know. And let me go back to this framing business again. Because if I got the story right, see, and I got this second hand, we got politicians now who are referring to Social Security as an entitlement.
Yes.
Medicare as an entitlement. Well, damn it, I paid for that stuff. That's no entitlement. You might be able to say that about Medicaid. But we need to really call these people on it and say, wait a minute, you got to fight this, you know, our people.
Yeah, yeah, because they're trying to steal it from us.
Exactly. I like that. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Do you remember when the right wing, and I think it was Orrin Hatch, or maybe it was Arlen Specter, I can't remember, during the confirmation of Slappy Thomas?
Yeah!
Do you remember when it was called a high-tech lynching?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, what this is,
And it goes back to your statement about framing. All this talk about what they would or would not do with Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, this is a low rent mugging.
I like that. Now, you know, the thing I want to say too is that Medicare has already been cut. My doctor cannot get care because his doctors won't see him because their payments have been cut. How about that? We need to get this stuff out there. I forgot what I was going to say. So we have to really counter them because they're going to sneak this crap in on us.
I don't think they're even sneaking anymore, Richard.
Well, they sneak it with the terminology, you know, and the thing that's terrible really is that Obama will start using their framing. He'll use their vocabulary. And then before you know it, you know, our Democrats in the Congress and the Senate will start talking with the same words. And we're sunk when they do that.
You know, I hope I'm not getting in trouble by repeating what I heard publicly said back on that ship in February. But I go back to this time and time and time again, Richard. It was a story told by a person who was in a position to be telling the truth. It was about being in a group or close enough to alone with President Obama to have a one-on-one conversation. And it was one of those, you know, Barbara Walters, Baba Wawa, if you could be a twee,
yeah,
what kind of a twee would you be kind of questions.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Right.
And the question gets put to President Obama, if you could do anything as president, what would be the first thing you would do? And his answer, Richard, now this is long before any debt ceiling crisis. This is before the House changed hands and went to the Republicans, okay, is when this is happening. Before any of that. There's no, you know, I guess the teabaggers are out there, but it's not, you know, things aren't where they are now is what I'm trying to get across.
Right. Oh, yeah.
What would you do if you could do anything? And, you know, I mean, if Richard is president, what's your answer, Richard? Universal single-payer health care? A living wage for everybody in the United States? I mean, this is if you've got a magic wand stuff, right?
Well, I know what my answer would be right now.
Okay. Well, no, not right now. I mean, you've got to place it in time, but go ahead.
Well, my answer would be a massive public works project.
That's rational. Right. Okay, that's reasonable.
Well, my father was one of the WPA artists. I'm talking from experience.
My grandfamily on my father's side were saved by either the WPA or the CCC. There was no work.
Right.
People were going hungry.
This is going to work.
Okay, well,
what was the answer anyway?
Okay, well, here's the answer. So the magic wand question is put. If you can do anything as president you want to do, what would you do? President Obama looks in the eye and says, I would reform entitlements.
We're in deep shit, man. if that's our man.
That's our man.
Now, you know, in terms of framing...
But let's not run away from that just quite yet, Richard, because okay. I want all of that. I want all of that to sink in. I mean, I would create peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis. I would eliminate hunger in Bangladesh. I would end the famine and the torment in the Sudan. That's a huge potential list of stuff you could do that would be a net good, that would get statues of you built in every city of any substance on the planet. And the answer comes out, I would reform entitlements. I mean, let that go all the way to the bone, man.
It did. Our man seems to be a Republican. You know?
I mean, Jesus, is this where we start hauling out the stills of, Murder, She Wrote? Come on, what's her name? Murder, She Wrote. Angela, is this where we haul out the story, the stills of Angela Lansbury wearing the Jack of Hearts or whatever from the Manchurian Candidate? Sick and twisted version of Only Nixon Can Go to China.
Exactly. This happens to be the Democrat we've got, and we're stuck with him for the time being, and we're undoubtedly stuck with him for the next cycle. So the question on my mind is, we have to take the guy as a reality. He doesn't have a clue. He doesn't really know what he's doing very much. And he's got too many Republicans around him, and he's a Republican, really. So if he's our Democrat, what are we going to do, you know, with the emphasis on do, to get this boy to come around? Because if we don't do anything, he's not gonna. He's very good at being Republican. He's very good at caving in to the bullies, you know. And since Carter, really, every time a Democrat's been in that office, the Republicans have been shooting at his feet nonstop. I don't know how we give him courage, you know, but we gotta at least try.
Wait, Richard. You know, we've been friends for a long time, but I got to tell you, I think you may be off down the wrong path here, brother.
Go ahead.
Courage is not what he needs. I mean, come on. It takes no small amount of courage to be a so-called Democrat and say, what we need to do is see what we can do about cutting Social Security and Medicare. I mean, that takes some courage. Because that means that, you know, that should mean that a vast swaka is going to rise up in its ancient and righteous anger and say, oh no, you don't.
Exactly, that's true.
So it's not courage where he has not found wanting in the courage department. He's found wanting in the words fail me.
Well,
he's found wanting in the human in the human compassion department. In the understanding of hunger department. In the going to old people's funeral department.
I think the man is living in a Potemkin village.
Of his making or whose?
The people he's surrounding himself with, I believe. I mean, he's serious cabinet problem. Is what I've been seeing, you know.
Well, I mean, when your ambassador quits so he can run for president against you, hello.
Yeah.
I mean, the irony of John Huntsman having been the ambassador to China is not lost on me, Richard.
Oh yes. Oh well, look at how this guy appointed Christ. I mean, you know. I mean. Okay, we knew beforehand from his Senate record that this guy was not really a liberal, but we didn't anticipate that he was going to appoint traitors really to tell him what to do, you know.
But I have to share my conflict of interest.
Okay.
Because the one thing he has got is apparently a very decent human being heading the EPA. And,
right.
And Barack Obama's EPA is absolutely under assault. I mean, the EPA is Bastogne, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah.
They're so besieged.
Yeah.
And yet they're moving forward doing decent things. The EPA, literally, with the promulgation of some new rules, has just attempted to save 34,000 American lives.
What did they do? I missed this.
Reading directly from the article on Grist, the EPA's new rules regulate emissions from coal-fired power plants, limiting air pollution from coal plants in 27 eastern states. According to the agency, this could result in 34,000 fewer premature deaths per year by 2014, plus preventing 15,000 non-fatal heart attacks and 400,000 cases of asthma every year. I mean, we're talking about preventing 1,704 deaths in Texas. We're talking about preventing 1,506 deaths in Illinois Okay, in 2004 deaths in New York, 2,911 in Pennsylvania, 702 here in West Virginia, 983 in Alabama, 1,705 in Tennessee, 1,404 in Kentucky. It goes on and on and on. Those are lives saved.
Huh? When does it go into effect?
It's supposed to go into effect in a matter of less than months. But, of course, there will be a lawsuit.
Yeah. Well, that's okay.
And so, I mean, but you know, so let's understand one thing real quick. That all goes away with, and trust me, these words are difficult to get out of my mouth. President Bachmann.
That's not going to
President
happen, but
Romney, President Pawlenty, President Harry.
Yeah,
President Hare, President Gangrene. That all goes away because the EPA's out there trying to kill jobs. Let me give you a quote real quick because this will make you run screaming into the night, Richard. One of my senators is, of course, Joe Manchin.
Right.
All right. So Joe is in a full-on hissy over this, and I offer you his press office's take on the new rules regarding coal plants. The continued jobs destroying overreach of the EPA is outrageous, and it's incomprehensible that in these difficult economic times, the administration would be so callous as to arbitrarily impose onerous rules that they know will cost countless American jobs and raise the daily costs of life for so many struggling families.
I don't see how your blood pressure's high.
One word, liquor. No, I'm kidding. Once again, the EPA is taking aim at the coal industry, small businesses, and the hard-working families who helped power and built this nation. Except the ones who go to the grave between now and 2014, all 34,000 of them, Senator Manchin.
Let me go to another item of framing on my list here, and that is that when Republican lawmakers talk about job creation, they're lying. Flat out.
Yes.
Especially when they couple that with, and they like to throw that name out there, but when they couple that with tax reduction, what is their constituent who is an investor? What's that investor going to do? He's going to buy more stock shares in company outsourced jobs to China. Open shut, because that is the premise of, I'm going to say capitalism right now, of our type of capitalism, you know, big corporate capitalism, is that a corporation is like a dog that I once met. My ex-wife and I were house sitting for a friend who had quite a bit of money. They had a dog that had an eating disorder. A little dog that couldn't stop eating, you know. We made corn on the corn cobs disappeared, you know. The dog was the dog was sitting behind the television finishing the corn cobs. And see, that is how
I've never heard of a canine eating disorder but I'm certainly willing to take it. Yes, absolutely.
Well, it happens, you know. It was a shock, you know, to see this with my own eyes. And
kind of tough to have a doggy intervention, isn't it?
Well, especially after the dog has done it, you know, eaten the corn cobs. But this is how I see our large corporations. They're in mostly is that they just have this insatiable appetite for more and more and more profit, profit without end, growth without end, stock splits, you know, inside
world without end.
World without end, amen. And the thing is that if we just get give to these people, that's what they're going to do. It's nothing new. You know, I can think way back in history to when Tandy Corporation bought Radio Shack. And all of a sudden, all the manufacturing went to the cheapest place you could get it.
And it turned into, overnight, it turned into app.
Oh, yes. But the, you know, the thing that I saw, I've seen a couple of contracts, both from Radio Shack and from Shure, who went on to the job exporting bandwagon. I'm going to guess you may even be talking on a Shure microphone.
No, I am not.
Oh, good. What is it?
It's an Electro Voice RE20.
Okay. Well, around 1985, you know, all of a sudden, the phonograph needles from Shure began to come in from Mexico, and of course, the quality got really iffy. And at this point, Shure has two factories in Mexico and three in China. You know, our great all-American source of microphones now. And you know, but I have a copy of one of their contracts with their suppliers, and I think I've seen one from Radio Shack. It states that so you see, they can take back their tools at any time for a product like a Volt ohmmeter, which happens to be one of my favorites from Radio Shack. Just happens to be really useful around the house.
I happen to own one myself, but
you know what I'm talking about.
It came in real handy when I was trying not to be electrocuted by the breaker box.
Exactly. It's perfect for the home, it's perfect for the car, and it's cheap. That meter has gone around the world in terms of its manufacturing. Radio Shack owns the design and the tools, so wherever the labor is cheapest, they farm out a new contract. They take back what they, you know, what they lent to the fab company, you know, to the fabricator, wherever it used to be, and they ship to Sri Lanka, wherever. And that's how it goes. So, you know, these people start waving the American flag.
Well, you know, you remind me of something here, if I could just interject for a second.
Yeah.
I ran across an article today. It came from the Jakarta Globe. Okay?
Yeah.
And it says, the headline says, with little fanfare, hundreds of millions were by Lawrence Chandy and Jeffrey Gertz. And it says, we are in the midst of the fastest period of poverty reduction the world has ever seen. The global poverty rate, which stood at 25% in 2005, is ticking downward at 1 to 2 percentage points per year, lifting around 70 million population of Turkey or Thailand out of destitution annually. Advances in human progress on such a scale are unprecedented, yet they remain almost universally unacknowledged. Well, I would, if I was sitting here talking to the authors of that piece, I would say something to them, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
And that is this. It ain't permanent.
Oh, yes, it's true.
Middle classes are only allowed to ride so far before they are sent packing back down into the depths of despair, as our middle class is being sent now. There will always be someone willing to work for less.
Yes.
Because they are desperate. And all of the evil, malicious policies and philosophies of Milton Friedman are predicated on that. And they are hateful. And there is always going to be some government that has some peasant population that will be willing to farm them out, a little sip at the pool, a little drink out of the well before they send them back into the desert. Because in the process of raising up that middle class, there's a lot of crony money that goes around, and a lot of petty little grasping, grabbing, grubbing, scratching, scraping little monsters get their share in the process. Whether they're English speaking, Thai speaking, Hindi speaking, it matters, Mandarin speaking, it matters not. So, you know, just to sort of in the course and context of your discussion, there's a reason those contracts go flying around the globe like they do. And with something that, a microcosmic story, whether it be phonograph needle or, you know, any of the various and sundry crap that I frequently have to purchase from Radio Shack, it's the same story. It's the raising of a middle class and then the destroying of a middle class in order to go and raise another one through cheap, because, you know, the economies of desperate places are always friendly to manufacturing. You understand?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I, you know, I've worked in high technology. I mean, I'm a musician. through and through, but, you know, we have to, it's all done. I mean, all the development is done on contract.
Sure.
You know, you hire the people when the product is, you know, developed, out they go. Company goes into maintenance mode.
Exactly. And Richard, we will pick this conversation up literally a week from this evening. But I got to get out. I got to get out of here for now. It is awfully good talking to you. And if you come up with what it takes to get through to someone, well, I'll offer you an email before we go. Cindy just wrote in from the Great Northwest, and she said Obama does not have a cabinet problem. She said what he has is an upbringing problem. He comes from the warm, friendly beaches of Hawaii, income topping $100,000 to live like a human. How much cash did his mother's family have? He has led a privileged life in Hawaii, and you can't expect him to understand American lives. He doesn't even understand what they in Hawaii call the mainland. He is not the man people think he is. Think of Little Lord Fauntleroy, and you've pretty well got it. Only the thing with Little Lord Fauntleroy is that Little Lord Fauntleroy caught on, Richard. It's a charming story and a charming little book. You know, he doesn't grow up to be, upper class twit monster. He develops a sense of empathy, does he not? So, you know, there you go.
Yeah, somebody's got to scrub the toilets in Hawaii at those resorts, you know.
Damn straight.
But I just want to put out a question to everybody, which is, how can we really create employment in this country?
Everybody's saying, well, you know, look, the economy is going to tank because, you know, the stimulus didn't do anything and there's no more quantitative easing. And the fact of the matter is, it's going in the tank because the first stimulus, if you just ask Paul Krugman, was no stimulus. The stimulus was no stimulus because it wasn't allowed to stimulate.
It was chicken shit.
There's another word for it. It certainly was. Bring yourself a good weekend, all right?
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. It is almost time to roll out, but we're not rolling out just yet. Georgia writing from California. Remember saying, Bob, remember that I told you I was looking at Obama with a squinted eye since he immediately after taking office fell in line with Bush's orders to keep our troops in the Middle East, although he ran on the promise that it would be an immediate withdrawal? I knew right then there that he was a corporate puppet who was capable of finishing up on anything that the White House rat's nest left behind. He's just another scummy, smooth-talking snake oil salesman. When I see him, I think of that song from Disney's Peter Pan. Never smile at a crocodile. No, you can't get friendly with a crocodile. Don't be taken in by his winsome grin. He's imagining how good you taste inside his skin. That's him. Just another corksacker. Love to Agnes and hugs for all. Keep fighting, Georgia and California. And see, when you got to understand, when people write in like this, with these observations, and when I say the things I say, I don't say it with joy. I don't say it because I hated the man from the start. I don't hate him now. But we got to have somebody who will stand up for us, and by putting blather out there, even if it's just 11-dimensional chess, even if it's just politics. Tell Michael I always liked him. It was only politics. It's still wrong, because there are some places where you don't equivocate, and there are some bluffs you don't make, because in these kind of so-called games, bluffs can easily be called. And what do we do if we are on the menu and Barack Obama's bluff gets called? Because at that point, he'll be an honorable man and honor his word with our flesh. Kate just wrote in a minute ago. She said, what was Susan's challenge? Would you please repeat it? Yes, I will. Between them, Susan and John, John's challenge has been met. He said of the first $50 that came in contributions, he would match 50. Susan then followed and said, for the next $100 that comes in, she will match that 100. We met John's challenge, and no one has tapped into Susan's as yet. So, it would be nice. It would be very, very nice. Because, we still have to get back to finish the third week of the Prism series. And there's no way I'm going to miss that. Kate adds, I've been in a news blackout for several days. I'm in shock that I'm on the menu. Guess it's time to slam John Teaster's office daily. Yeah, it is. Everybody's office. By God, if you live in a district with a Republican in it, call Daly. We will not stand still for this mugging. And that's what it is. It's a tawdry, little, low-rent, sleazy mugging on a darkened in a darkened alleyway. Because Republicans don't have they're cut purses. Sneak thieves, footpads, preying upon the fear and the ignorance, which in combined form is nothing short of toxic, of this country. I urge you to go and watch again. I urge you to go and watch or listen to Dr. Bill's presentation from this Wednesday night past. There's something in there about fear as well. It's magnificent. Kate says, later, I'm toasted by the job today. Randall writes in and says, all you need to know about Obama is his Republican FCC appointment. An empty seat opens up on the Federal Communications Commission, and what does Obama do? He appoints a Republican that later leaves and joins Comcast. After recommending a little sweetheart deal for Comcast and passing on it. So I guess that's the show for this evening. Thanks to all of you who helped keep this going with your contributions, both of finance, of your energies, of your ideas, and of the precious finite time that you share. Never for a moment imagine that all of that is not cherished on this end. The Prism series, PRISM, resumes on Monday at 8:30 in the morning, 8:30 Eastern Time. It's 5:30 Pacific. Fascinating topics this coming week. Toward Civil War, origins of the philosophical conflict. The Supreme Court and America's founders. Dred Scott and the founders. The post-Reconstruction Supreme Court. When compromise fails. Leading up to 1860. Meet Mr. Lincoln. International context of the American Civil War. Primary sources, Harper's Magazine, 1855 to 1865, looking at the American Civil War. A look at the 19th century America through fashion. We are others what we believe we are. This will be a great coming week. So I hope you will tune in. And then beginning a week from tonight, we get back to our normal, quotation marks, schedule. Everyone, I hope you have a great weekend. It should be, at least a little bit of relaxation here. We go back down to the campus of Concord University in Athens, West Virginia, on Sunday night. And stay through Thursday. Y'all take care till then. Thanks to everybody, like I said, who makes all this go. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, our moderator there. Thanks to Gene and Susan, our news ninjas. Susan with her challenge there of matching the next $100 worth of contributions that come in via the PayPal account.
I can't really count the snail mail stuff because it takes too long to get here to include it in the challenge. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy, who had a great little post about, is Bob ever coming back? Thank you, Betsy. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy, headonradionetwork.com. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, host, and official keeper of my sanity on things like this remote, which, by the way, if you will look in, you will see, especially on the video, you'll see little differences, and those are little differences that point toward improvements coming in the horn itself. And John has kept me sane through all of that, and this remote has gone more smoothly than any we have ever done before. Thanks to everyone who helped with that, especially John. Thanks to Ben Birch at White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org. Since 2002, making sure that liberal and progressive conversation, thoughts, and ideas in the broadcast realm remained available across the country and around the world, and without ever charging a fee. WhiteRoseSociety.org, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. They never back down, and they never give up. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Again, have a great weekend. Rick Smith is next on the horn.